Every person in the Missouri Senate, please rise, including the upper gallery, for the prayer by our chaplain, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag.
Madeline Lingo wrote, "Faith is what makes life bearable, with all its tragedies and ambiguities and sudden, startling joys." Lord God, we are so mindful of the tragedies of Japan and the loss of life and property there and in our own country. We pray for the injured and for those who walk through grief at the loss of loved ones. So we ask that you provide healing and comfort to all in need. And we are thankful for faith that allows us to trust in you and see light in dark places. We are thankful for safe travel through this morning's winter wonderland and are grateful to be here and to do what is required of us. So we give you thanks and praise for all you provide us to make it through these tough times. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Callahan, Chappelle Nadal, Crowell, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Engler, Goodman, Green, Justice, Kevany, Kehoe, Kraus, Lager, Lamping, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Munslinger, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Ferguson, Richard, Ridgway, Roop, Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Stouffer, Wasson, Wright-Jones.
A quorum is present. The Senate is in session. Secretary, read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular.
The Senator from the 23rd.
Mr. President, I move further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
You have heard the motion of the Senator from the 23rd. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading is dispensed with. Introduction of guests. The Senator from the 8th with a new haircut.
Mr. President, point of personal privilege.
Senator from the 8th will be heard.
As you pointed out, I do have a new haircut. It is shaved off. This Saturday, I had the distinct pleasure to raise some money for Hope House. Hope House is a domestic violence shelter in eastern Jackson County. And for the price of shaving my head, I was able to raise $5,000 for the Hope House. And so I hope to save a little bit of conversations throughout this week on my haircut. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. For what purpose does the Senator from 14th seek recognition?
Mr. President, I have some really special guests today from my district.
Proceed.
Dr. Colin and Diana Nichols are here today with their sons, Will and George, and would you please welcome them on their spring break to the Missouri Senate?
We are delighted to welcome the guests of the Senator from the 14th to the Missouri Senate.
And Mr. President, I would like to have George, who is sporting a tie-dye t-shirt today, reflective of our community, as well as Will, be pages for the day.
They shall be made pages for the day to serve a compensation to be paid by the Senator from the 14th. Introduction, Senator from Cole.
Mr. President, I'd like to introduce some very special guests this afternoon. Joining us to my left and to your right is Riley King, age 10. Is with us today with her grandfather, David King. Both are from Jasper, Alabama, but they're visiting Riley's father, Brandon, of Jefferson City. David is also the father of Tracy King, who roams the halls and everybody here knows, and Riley is her niece. Please make Riley and David King feel welcome.
Let's welcome all the guests of the Senator from Cole to the Missouri Senate today. Introductions. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. The Senator from Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a remonstrance, and I would ask that it be read.
Send your remonstrance forward. Read the remonstrance of the senator from Buchanan.
Senate Remonstrance 1, offered by Senator Shaw. Whereas investigative journalism has a storied history that dates back to the original muckrakers of the 19th century who bravely investigated political corruption and abuses of power, knowing full well of the personal and professional consequences that would result from such investigations and the reports that followed. And whereas the rich tradition of investigative journalism includes such notable figures as Nellie Bly, Upton Sinclair, and Woodward and Bernstein. And whereas investigative journalism has the power to shine a light upon political corruption and expose the unlawful use of power by elected officials. And whereas the exposing of such corruption can lead to needed reforms in ethics and political governance, and at the very least, the removal of corrupt public officials. And whereas at a recent hearing of the Senate Committee on Progress and Development regarding Senate Bill No. 23, the committee heard the testimony of a St. Louis City police officer. And whereas such officer testified that the officer was on duty and investigating a commotion, and that the officer encountered a street vendor operating without a permit issued by the City of St. Louis. And whereas during the course of the investigation, the vendor told the officer that a permit was not needed because he had paid the fee to an alderman and proceeded to show the officer a business card from the alderman. And whereas the officer reported the findings of the investigation to his superior, but told the committee that no further investigation was completed. And whereas during the hearing on Senate Bill No. 23, including the testimony of the officer, members of the St. Louis Press Corps were present. And whereas following the hearing, there have been no reports of such testimony or investigation into the allegations raised by such testimony by any member of the St. Louis Press Corps. And whereas such failure to investigate and report fails the great tradition of investigative journalism and allows potential political corruption to continue unabated. And whereas the St. Louis Press Corps, as part of the Fourth Estate, has a duty and responsibility to investigate and report on such allegations. And whereas by failing to do so, the St. Louis Press Corps has failed the citizens of St. Louis. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the members of the Missouri Senate 96th General Assembly, first regular session, hereby remonstrates against the St. Louis Press Corps for its disregard of the proper role of a journalist to investigate and report upon corruption within the City of St. Louis, regardless of the political implications or consequences to such investigation or reporting. And be it further resolved that the Secretary of the Senate be instructed to send a copy of this remonstrance to the Missouri Press Association.
The remonstrance, as just read, will be printed in the Journal of the Missouri Senate. We are on the order of business of petitions, memorials, remonstrances, resolutions, concurrent resolutions. Senator from the 23rd, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you ask the Secretary of the Senate if there are messages from the governor? If there are, I'd ask for a waiver of the reading that they be printed in the journal.
The answer is affirmative. The reading will be waived. They shall be printed in the journal. The senator from Stoddard.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you please refer the gubernatorial appointments to the Committee on Gubernatorial Appointments?
Shall be so referred, Senator. Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection, the informal calendar, Senate Bill 1.
Senate bills for perfection, the informal calendar, Senate Bill 1. The senator from Clay.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill No. 1 be brought before the body.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move that Senate Bill No. 1 be perfected and ordered printed. Mr. President, Senate Bill 1 is a bill that does simply this. It would allow Missouri workers the opportunity to work in a right-to-work state. Mr. President, what this bill is all about is we have had now for a number of years problems after problem after problem trying to make Missouri a more attractive state in which to have jobs, start businesses, and to work. And we have had success to this point to not a great degree, Mr. President. Mr. President, our unemployment rate is now approaching 10%, and that's what we know about. Mr. President, there are those who have fallen off the rolls, the unemployment count, and there are estimates that our true unemployment in the state of Missouri is nearing 16, 17, 18%. I've heard estimates as high as 20%. But Mr. President, with this, we are trying to find every tool available to us other than what we have been doing, because we clearly have to do something different. We have tried corporate giveaways. We have tried offering incentives. We have tried so many different things, and at best, we're treading water. I know something about that. I was a sponsor of the Missouri Manufacturers Bill last year, and yes, it appears that we've had some success in retaining jobs, but again, we are only treading water. At this point, we have to turn our attention to what is going on in the United States and, in fact, in our global economy to find out what else Missouri can do to make this an attractive place for jobs and the workers who take those jobs. One of the things that I found most startling was when I looked at the 2010 census data and I took a look at where the population had gone and, as a result, where congressional representation had gone. We all question where people would stand on the issue of right to work. Well, I can tell you, in looking at that map, no one can deny when you look at that map that the people who produce the jobs and the workers who take them are fleeing to states that are right to work states. When you look at that map, Mr. President, what you will find is that there is on average about 10 members of a congressional delegation that, due to population shift, has been picked up in right-to-work states. But then when you look at the non-right-to-work states, we have lost a commensurate amount of population, and we have lost approximately 10 members of congressional delegation. And in this world, whether we like it or not, congressional representation means more tax dollars coming back to your state, more jobs coming back to your state, more representation with regard to our federal government, and the enormous amount of control that, once again, whether we like it or not, it exerts over each and every one of us. Because of that, there's a couple of exceptions, and I'll grant you that. Louisiana is one exception, but they also had the exception of Katrina. And there's one other exception. But, Mr. President, when you also look at the unemployment rate, the best thing that we can do for unemployed Missourians is to get them back to work. When you look at the unemployment rate of the right-to-work states that surround Missouri, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Kansas, our neighbor just very close to my senatorial district, Nebraska, Iowa, all of those states are right-to-work states. Every single one of those states has a lower unemployment rate than does the state of Missouri. In fact, if you look at the December 2010 unemployment rate for Nebraska, you will find that it was approximately 4.4. If we could only have that type of unemployment rate here in Missouri, Mr. President, we wouldn't have these budget woes. We wouldn't be having the problem balancing our budget. We wouldn't be struggling to try to fund the money for the developmentally disabled, for education, and for our other good programs in the state of Missouri and for public safety. But that isn't what we have, and as a result, we have budget difficulties. So how do we go forward to compete for those jobs of the 21st century? What puts Missouri back on a level playing field? What are those elements that make up the proper recipe to get Missourians back to work and to bring jobs to our state? Well, one of the things that I can tell you, a state very similar to us is Tennessee. It is another state that surrounds us that is a right-to-work state. Now, although their unemployment rate is comparable to ours, Tennessee actually gained jobs in 2010. We lost jobs. Missouri lost jobs in 2010. When you look at our other two neighbors that are non-right-to-work state, Illinois and Kentucky, they match or exceed our unemployment rate, with Kentucky having a 10% plus unemployment rate. Mr. President, we cannot continue to go down this path and where that our citizens are unemployed and our surrounding states have jobs. When we had the testimony and the hearing on Senate Bill 1, I thought it was a very good hearing, and I applaud the chair of the General Laws Committee because it, of course, is a controversial issue. It is an emotional issue. But we had a fair hearing where the proponents and the opponents got to voice their concerns. And out of that, one of the things actually that I learned was from the opponents exactly how far down union participation has fallen in the state of Missouri. The opponent testified that we have 7% private participation in unions and 4% public for a total of 11%. It is our responsibility in the state of Missouri to make policy that impacts the greatest number of Missourians in the most positive way possible. 89% of Missouri's workforce is already not part of a union. I find that statistic startling. But more than that, whenever we had the testimony, interestingly enough, I don't think the most compelling testimony came from a proponent or an opponent, but rather from a person who testified for informational purposes only. Mr. Mark Sweeney of McCollum Sweeney National Corporate Siding Company from one of the Carolinas came and testified. He said, frankly, I don't care if Missouri goes right to work or stays as a union state, but this I will tell you. You are competing in a brand new environment with regard to jobs. It used to be when a corporation had jobs and they wanted to expand or take jobs to a new area, they would broadcast that fact, and then the governors of the various states or the leaders of various nations or various economic development groups could get together and start competing for those jobs. That is not the way it's done anymore. The way it is largely done now is the corporations will go privately to a national siding corporation, and they will privately discuss their needs, their wants, their likes, and their dislikes, and the environment where they need to have their jobs, where they believe that they can best compete in a global economy. It was Mr. Sweeney's testimony that out of all the manufacturers that come to him for assistance in siding their new jobs, 50% of them have it as a pass-fail test as to whether or not the state is a right-to-work state. And he said the most startling things about those 50% of those jobs that won't even consider Missouri is that Missouri will never even know they exist. You can't even compete for a job that you don't know exists because you are written off. I used to say that our application was summarily thrown in the trash, but that is not correct. We don't even get to the application stage because we don't even know those jobs exist. In addition to that, Mr. Sweeney said out of all the jobs, whether high-tech or manufacturing or whatever types of jobs, he said 30% of those will not consider Missouri at all because it is not a right-to-work state. That is startling. I've also talked to members because, of course, I represent an area near Kansas City, Missouri. Kansas is a right-to-work state, as is all of our neighbors to the west, north, south. And I've been told over and over again by people who are on those joint economic development commissions that span the Kansas-Missouri border that even out of those jobs that is willing to consider the greater Kansas City area, Missouri loses 30% or more of those jobs just simply because of the right-to-work issue alone. So let's get down to one last thing. Exactly what would it mean to be right-to-work? Well, frankly, do you think it is fair or unfair for a worker to lose their job if he or she refuses to pay dues to or support a union? What this bill would do is still allow unions to function as they function very well in the 22 states that are right-to-work states. There are many people who are well represented by unions in those states. But what it does do is it gives the individual worker the opportunity to say, no, I don't believe I'm being fairly represented. I don't believe that this is the right thing for me to do. And they can opt out of paying their union dues. Now, as a general rule, I understand from talking with people in right-to-work states, as a general rule, they don't. But it really boils down to this, not whether or not we will have unions, because I can tell you, we have the Ford Clay Como plant in my district. I can look across the river from my district and see the GM Fairfax plant. Kansas is right to work. The GM Fairfax plant has an agreement with UAW, and the workers choose to belong. Missouri, the same thing. So they do function in both areas. I don't even think that the people who are opposed to this bill would seriously contend that unions are non-functional and do not represent the employees well in right-to-work states. They do. They function. As a matter of fact, we had testimony, another bit of startling testimony that I was surprised to hear, from a former union organizer, a former business agent, who said that in his experience, actually he believes that because of the market forces, that a person can choose to leave and take their dues with them and continue to work there, that it actually makes the workplace and the environment better for the worker because they have the ability to leave. Mr. President, I know there are a lot of people who have a lot of things to say about this, but I also want to note that there are people that live near me that they have had their job leave from the state of Missouri to a neighboring right-to-work state. And even though they may not agree with me on the core of this bill, they will tell you that they have not lost their benefits. In fact, their job, their position, their benefits has been maintained even though they're in a right-to-work state. And they have been transferred away from a union state into a right-to-work state. Mr. President, this is about putting Missouri on a better playing field in order to compete for jobs of the 21st century, from data centers to high tech to manufacturing, and to grow small entrepreneurs. Mr. President, I would like to inquire of the senator from Stoddard.
Senator, I will inquire of him momentarily, but may I ask you a question?
Yes, indeed.
Senator, you know that you do need at some point to move the adoption of the Senate committee substitute.
Mr. President, I do move for the adoption of the Senate committee substitute.
Very good. Now that we have that before us, does the senator from Stoddard yield for inquiry?
Yes.
He yields. You may inquire.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, it's been a long road to get this bill to this point, and you've been very much a driving force. Now, you and I have been around these halls for quite a while. And I want to ask you, what led you to the decision that you believe that this is an important step for Missouri, for jobs, and for the workers who take those jobs?
Well, first, let me say this, Senator. I have no aversion or any opposition to collective bargaining or people belonging to a union in any shape, form, or fashion. Certainly recognize that down through the history of our nation and our state, unions have done some good things for workers, and certainly I appreciate that. But after being selected as the pro tem of the Missouri Senate and certainly voted on by our caucus, you know, I've noticed all along that Missouri continues to have a high rate of unemployment. Right now we're at 9.4%. And this is my 11th session in the Missouri legislature. I spent four in the House. I spent this will be my seventh year in the Senate. And I live in southeast Missouri, and I've observed Arkansas and Tennessee, the northeast part of Arkansas. And, you know, I don't want to be Tennessee. I don't want to be Arkansas. But I want to give our workers here in Missouri an opportunity to gain employment. And I've seen in northeast Arkansas over the last 20 years how they have been able to secure manufacturing facilities that actually had made inquiries into locating in southeast Missouri. And it came down to the fact that we didn't have a right to work law, and so they went to those other states. And, the dynamics of our economy here in the United States and in the state of Missouri have changed so dramatically over the last 20 years. I mean, we are now in a worldwide economy, and things change so rapidly. The dynamics of the economy these days and the factors and variables change at such a rapid pace that really, in a lot of instances, forced unionism is not the best policy to have in place. Because, we have 22 states here in the United States that have right-to-work laws. I'm not aware of any of those since implementing that policy, repealing that. And when the study that I've done, I saw from the National Institute for Labor Relations Research that Missouri's manufacturing GDP has actually decreased by 12.9% from 2000 to 2009, while right-to-work states have had an average of 14.7% growth over the same period of time. And when you look at the unemployment rates across the nation, you find out that there are seven states that have right-to-work laws that have the lowest amount of unemployment. I mean, just look at the neighboring states around us. Iowa at 6.3%, Nebraska 4.4%, Kansas at 6.8%, Oklahoma at 6.8%, Arkansas right under 8%. All of those are significantly lower than our 9.4% rate that we have here in Missouri.
And
so those are the reasons.
You formerly were the appropriations chair, so I know that you know a considerable amount about the budget of the state of Missouri. In your estimation, with your background and experience as being the appropriations chair, what do you believe we would be looking at this year as far as an improved budget condition if we could just put 3 to 4% of Missourians back to work?
Oh, it would be, the revenue that would come into the state would be dramatic. This budget that we have here in the state of Missouri is so reliant on people being on the job, working. I mean, our general revenue comes from workers who are at work and that are paying state income tax. And without them, our revenue drops dramatically. In 2008, we hit a high water mark in general revenue of $6.774 billion. Our high water mark was $8 billion in 2008. Just last year in 2010, we dropped all the way to $6.774 billion. A lot of that went down because people are without work and they're not paying taxes. And so our revenue has decreased dramatically. And I thought the good point that you made was here we have a gentleman who's hired to find sites for new businesses, for companies that are considering expanding, and 50% tell him, hey, listen, if your state is not a right-to-work state, we won't even consider it. And the other 50%, Senator, use a right-to-work policy as part of their criteria.
Absolutely.
In determining whether or not they're going to locate this state.
I forgot that that was part of his testimony. He said in every instance, particularly with manufacturing jobs, the right-to-work issue was a factor. In 50% of the jobs, it was the deciding factor as to whether or not a state would even be considered. And in the remaining, even the high-tech jobs, there were 30% that refused to consider that at all because Missouri's not a right-to-work state. So we're losing out on data centers, which is very important to Hunt Midwest in my area. And when I also ask the witnesses with regard to data centers, where have we lost the data centers too, including, I mean, major jobs like Google and Yahoo, where did we lose them to? We lost them to Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas, and Oklahoma. And that's just startling to me to think that we're losing jobs that are high-tech jobs in part because of this particular issue. I'm amazed by that. I don't know if that was something that you knew about before then.
Well, Senator, bringing that up, I had a conversation just this last weekend from a gentleman from in the Boot Hill that's been engaged in economic development for years. And in northeast Arkansas, around the Blytheville area, they have some steel mills that just, they've been there for quite a while now. But they actually had approached several site locations in southeast Missouri. I think one of them is Nucor Steel, and they hire thousands of people that make good wages and benefits, and they told the economic developers, hey, we're not coming to southeast Missouri because we can go just across the border and set up a location there, and they have a right-to-work policy. So, and I can name a couple other manufacturers that considered southeast Missouri that went to other areas in the country. But, it's a situation where do we want to continue to tie the hands of our economic development personnel? Are we going to be willing to make tough decisions? Are we going to be willing to do things differently than what we've done over the last 25 to 30 years? And if we don't, we're going to continue to be left behind.
Well, and Senator, there's something else that I think is very important because the area that I represent is very different demographically than the area
Certainly.
That you represent. But I want to camp a little bit on this issue where I think that there's going to be some competing studies that are going to be thrown around that do people make less in right-to-work states? And I've seen study after study that indicates that once adjusted for regional differences, like, for example, obviously it costs more to live in Kansas City than it costs to live in maybe Dexter, Missouri. And it costs more to live in New York than it does to live in Kansas City. That once adjusted, that the actual earnings per family are higher in those states. And you know what really... Apparently, we have some people who might disagree with that.
Well, I appreciate the fact they're listening.
I appreciate the fact they're listening, too. That doesn't happen very often in Missouri Senate. But one of the things that is interesting to me is where the population has gone and the jobs that are there. Nobody forced those workers to go there. They went, and they stayed. So when jobs open back up, or when they open back up in other states, they didn't come back. And so apparently, it's not that fact alone that they've walked with their feet, they've voted with their feet on this issue, tells me that there's something there worth going for and worth staying for. Or else it would only make sense that they would flee back to where they came from originally. They're not. Senator, one other thing. You and I talked about how that 50% of the jobs, that we won't even know about those, because right away they say, I won't consider a state that is non-right to work. When we flipped that around and said, how many jobs, how many manufacturers specifically say, I won't consider a state unless it is a union state, a non-right to work state? You know what the answer was?
What was the answer?
Answer was zero. Zero. And I don't know. I appreciate your leadership on this.
Well, we appreciate what you've done. And, you know, I found out this weekend also that where union membership has actually grown, almost a little over 40% has taken place in right-to-work states. So only 22 states have a right-to-work policy, that over 40% of the growth in union membership has come in those states.
Right. And I'm continually amazed whenever you continue to put the numbers together as to what all this means. There is not, and I think you would agree with this, most everybody on this floor would agree with this, there is not one single answer that is going to solve Missouri's budget problems. There's not one single answer that's going to put Missourians back to work. But there is a recipe for success. This is obviously a component of it, and we can't keep doing what we have been doing. But because frankly, there's a lot of hardworking people here listening to us today, and there's a lot of hardworking people at home listening to us on the internet. And we've been doing something that I know you and I have engaged in this discussion that we've got to stop doing, or certainly rein it in. We've been taking money from hardworking Missourians to get up, provide for their family, and bring a paycheck home at the end of the week. And we've been transferring that over to corporations in the hope that we would bring more jobs in, or that we would keep jobs. And frankly, as former appropriations chair, I think you agree, we can't keep doing that, nor should we keep doing that.
That is correct, and as I've said all along, that, you know, is right to work going to be a cure-all? No, it's not going to be a cure-all, but I think it will be a significant policy that we can implement that can really make a big difference in manufacturing, and it's just one segment of what needs to be a comprehensive economic development plan for Missouri to put people back to work, to give an opportunity to those almost 280,000 Missourians who are unemployed, and unfortunately our unemployment rate has been over 9% now for going on 2 years. And you know, I've had people ask me about the contentiousness of right to work and my concern about that contention and that opposition, and my answer is I'm more concerned about the 280,000 Missourians that are out of work. That's
Absolutely.
My concern, and for the future of our children here in Missouri.
Absolutely, Senator. I appreciate it. Thank you for the inquiry. Mr. President.
Senator.
I would like to inquire of the Senator from the 7th.
Does the Senator from the 7th yield?
I do, Mr. President.
Senator,
Proceed.
Thank you very much for the inquiry. Senator, this was I want to thank you for what I thought was a very fair. I'm going to scoot over this way a little bit so that
maybe we ought to make this clear to those in the gallery what's going on. There's a rule in the Senate that you have to face the president of the Senate all the time, so it sometimes makes us look like when we're debating or inquiring of somebody behind us that we're being rude. But that's the rule, and we have to do it that way.
Actually, we're not being rude to each other. We're being respectful to the chair.
Yes.
To the president. So. I do want to thank you because it was a long hearing, but I believe everybody had a fair shot at getting in a very, very good way, because you actually changed kind of the form that we do things, that instead of taking all the opponents and then all the proponents and then all the opponents, you had a real chance for us to bounce back and forth between proponents and opponents. And I was just curious, what was it about this issue that led you to do that? Because I think it was very fair.
Well, that's exactly my goal. I was trying to make it very fair. I wanted to make sure everybody felt they had been respected, that committee hearing was done in a very professional manner, and that everybody had a fair hearing. I was pleased with the way it went. Jumping back and forth between opponents and proponents allowed each person to be able to actually relate to each other and the information that had been given right before them. It also allowed, while the committee was still fresh, and it was a three-hour hearing, while the committee was still fresh, being able to bring those who actually were speaking against you, Senator, right, a chance to really be heard in a fair-minded way by the committee. I was very, very grateful after the committee hearing to be thanked profusely by the union leaders. Right. And by senators on this floor who really appreciated the way it was conducted. And I thought, because this is an emotional issue, it was really good to start with a very fair hearing where everybody could be heard, and I learned a lot in that hearing.
And that was just exactly what I was going to ask you, because I think it's important to note, okay, I'm from the Kansas City area. The senator from Stoddard is from the Boot Heel area of the state. And now you have a completely different geographic mm-hmm. and demographic area that you represent. So what was it that was important to you that came out in the testimony? Because I'm like you. I learned from the opponents mm-hmm. as well as the proponents, and certainly from those who testified for information only. So tell me.
Well, you know, the senator from the 10th over in your side of the state has reminded us several times this session, correctly, that we need to be about talking about jobs. And I guess what I learned in that committee hearing, I can't think of one thing that we're doing, fix the six or anything, even though those are important, I cannot think of one thing that we are looking at that is more helpful to us in bringing jobs to the state of Missouri than this issue. And I thank the senator from Stoddard who kind of made us focus on this, and we've learned a lot. But the thing that hit me the most was the consultant from South Carolina, who was a person who specializes in bringing particularly manufacturing jobs and placing them at sites, both domestic and foreign. And when he told us, and it was very clear, he didn't care. You know, he wasn't trying to promote anything or deny it. He would place people where they wanted to go, and he was there to tell them what it was like in each state. But to know that 50% of the locations are not even looking at Missouri, right, it was shocking to me. And I know the senator from Stoddard, he cares an awfully lot about bringing manufacturing jobs to Missouri.
Right.
And we're just turning our back on them. We can't afford that when we are nearing 10% unemployment. So that's what hit me the most.
I was equally shocked by that, because you and I both have it as our responsibility to try to do what we can in our time of service here to figure out what is the right mix, what are the qualities that employers are currently looking for, and how do they currently go about figuring out where to put their jobs. And I found out that Missouri is basically we're competing almost as if it was 20, 25, 30 years ago, mm-hmm. and that's not what's happening today. In fact, I think we also had some testimony that if this was really about seeing how low we could drive the pay scale, that's a bogus argument, because nowadays we compete in a global economy. There are other reasons why people choose to locate in Missouri or in Kansas or in Arkansas or Oklahoma or any one of the 22 states. other than low wages, just simply because they will go beyond the shores of the United States where they don't have to worry about that. Do you remember that testimony?
Yes, I really do. And it moved me, and I want to, if I don't want to switch to another topic, but
go right
I want to go back to something that you and the senator from Stoddard were talking about with regard to salaries. And there were some statistics done, and everyone knows, well, let's say this. My son's in the military, and I know he gets different amounts of money to live where he goes, depending on where he's sent. And so when he goes to an area that it costs a lot more to live there, the government gives him more to pay for his housing and in that area.
Just like federal per diem.
Right. You have and I was just going to say, just where we go, if we get more back for a lunch in New York City than we do in Jefferson City.
Absolutely.
And so the cost of living is very different, and obviously your disposable income is going to be dependent on not only how much you make, but how much it costs to live there.
Right.
And so if we look, for instance, at New York City, which you mentioned, and Provo, Utah, totally different cost of living. And apartments, everything, services and everything. So there's been a study done that actually gives a fair balance of what is that disposable income and how does it differ. And they found that right-to-work states, the disposable income, so therefore what you end up more with at the end, is $4,400 better in a right-to-work state. So if I have $4,400
or
more to spend because I lived in a place that was less expensive, then that's important to me, is how much money I have to spend in the end.
Well, Senator, I was, you know, I'm originally from Central Missouri, and I know that housing costs and all sorts of different costs are much lower in the central part of the state because that's been an issue down here. Every state representative, every state senator makes the same pay, but it means something different whenever you go home with that paycheck. In fact, I'm looking at a senior research associate that had to do with real earnings in the different states that are right to work. And once again, I know eventually when we continue this conversation with those who are opposed to this bill that they will have competing studies. But the most telling answer to me as to really what does that mean is when people move to right to work states and take those jobs there, they're choosing to move down there, they're choosing to take the job, and moreover, they're staying down there. Missouri has gone from 10 congressional representatives, we've lost population, then we went to 9, now we've lost more population, now we've gone to 8.
Yeah, you can't get around that fact, it happened.
No, and in addition to that, I don't know about your area, because once again, I know the dynamics are different, and you've got a mighty river that separates you from Illinois, but
we're still losing. Our city lost 8%.
Your city lost 8%. Missouri is bleeding jobs to the Kansas side. Now, I realize that there are a number of factors for that, but instead of looking at all the factors that's going on with regard to Kansas, one of the things that we have to look at, what's going on in our own backyard? And I know that some people say it's earnings tax and it's taxation and it's all these different tax structures, but I think anybody who's been down in these halls very long understands that there's a whole series of things that a state can do right or do wrong to get people back to work. And it's clear to me at this point that one of the things that we're doing wrong is we are not allowing the workers the opportunity to pay or not to pay. When they go to work there, they have to pay. And it makes a difference.
You know, it really does. It's about basic worker freedom to me. When I listened to everything that we had to hear, basic worker freedom. And there was a man who actually started unions. His name was Samuel Gompers, and he was the first and longest serving president of the AFL. He was around from 1850 to 1924, and one of his premises was exactly what this bill says. He believed that if you were compelled to join a union, then they didn't have to work hard to serve you well and please you.
Yes.
But if you were not compelled, which is exactly what this bill would offer, then the union is going to work hard to earn your trust and to earn your membership.
Right.
And so what we've actually found from his take on that is that many of our states, four of our states that are right to work, their unions are actually growing. Well, they're growing because those unions are forced to please their members.
Yes.
Because they don't get the dues if they don't keep their members happy. And in the state of Virginia, they do not recognize. Virginia does not recognize public unions. But guess what? Those state workers still get paid.
Right.
And the firefighters union in Virginia is one of the strongest in the country. The reason it's one of the strongest and the reason it's so effective is that their members are not compelled to be in it. They have to earn that membership.
Right. They have to earn it.
And when you earn it, then you're going to be, as a member, a lot more dedicated to it, and it's going to be a lot more effective union.
And that was part of the testimony in your committee hearing that you conducted that was from the former business agent, that he said that he had noticed that when he would go and visit a union state, that a lot of times, not always,
mm-hmm.
it, you know, obviously it's based on the individual and how deeply they just individually are going to care about their job, but he would notice that in the union states, that when the workers had a grievance, that many times the answer was, if you don't like it, there's the door.
Mm-hmm.
But he would go to another place that he said would be a right-to-work state, and he said, I kept noticing how every time I went into these shops, they were hustling for, they were really working hard for the working person that they represented. And I know that there's going to be a lot of peer pressure with regards to the union, so that one person isolated here or one person isolated there probably isn't going to drop out. But they know full well that they cannot afford to alienate any number of people because they can vote with their dollars. They don't have to support.
And so therefore they get a lot better service.
Exactly. They get much better service. And I was amazed at the testimony. And Senator, I don't know if you remember the testimony or if this is an appropriate time to get into it, but there was also some very compelling testimony from an entrepreneur that I think had started a business.
Yes.
There. I don't know if you recall that testimony or not.
That the air conditioning business?
Yes.
Yes, I do remember that one. Although not real specifics of it, but it was pretty gruesome.
I understand that testimony. We may talk about it a little bit mm-hmm. later. But the testimony of that person who was a former union member
yes.
who decided that he wanted himself to pursue the dream of owning his own business.
Yes.
And that he could do a better job owning his own business and running the business than his current employer. So he went out and he did just that.
Mm-hmm.
But he paid good wages, he had good benefits, mm-hmm. and was mm-hmm. a non-union shop. But then there was a time that the corner turned and the union came and insisted that his shop be unionized.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an acrimonious relationship, I would say, to say the least there,
yes.
because he said, I'm already paying well, I have good benefits, I'm a former union member, what is the problem? And apparently the problem was that he was doing just that.
Yes.
He was maintaining good wages, he was doing a good job. When there finally was a vote, which I think it's important to note, if you have, let's say you have 30 employees, and on the day of the vote, for whatever reason, because they're scared, because they're sick, because it's snowing, only 12 people show up. If 7 people vote that is going to become a union shop,
then a forced
all 30
membership.
Are yeah. into it. And then the union will probably choose to bargain for an exclusive contract.
Yes.
So there will probably be some discussion later that they have to represent everyone.
Yes.
And the fact of the matter is, the union itself is responsible.
And let me go back to that just a minute. When they are the exclusive bargainer, that means I lose my right as an employee to even have any interaction with my boss with regard to my own benefits.
With regard to your employment, that's correct, because as soon as your employer talks directly to you about that, that's considered an unfair labor practice. So
yes.
you do lose your right, even if you didn't vote for the union, you lose your right
right.
under an exclusive bargaining contract. That's correct.
And I know that same person who testified, he did lose several of his employees in that. I think 4 of them worth about 54 years of experience with him. And they did move in all that controversy, and some of them have come back and tried to get a job.
Right.
He was back again. Yes.
He was in a hiring hall environment and they took his best employees away yes. from him and sent them on other jobs and sent very inexperienced people who could no longer serve his clients
right.
and his customers, and he lost his business. And I know that although it's been years ago, the man was clearly very emotionally shaken over what had happened to him. But the problem is 95% of the jobs in the state of Missouri are from small employers and entrepreneurs.
Yes.
If that is the message that we're sending out to people who want to start their HVAC business, if that's the message that this can happen to you, in my area, why wouldn't you just go across the river and
yeah.
do the same thing in Kansas where it really wouldn't happen to you?
Yeah, the liability is too much for someone who wants to take the risk of their life savings and their energy and the time to provide jobs and to provide a service. It's too great. And I will tell you, I listened to it. You know, I put myself in those shoes. And I listened to it and I thought, good night, I can't believe we're getting anybody to start companies if they're susceptible
right.
to this. It's just too great a liability when somebody pours everything they've had. And you know, even Samuel Gomper said that the best, just a minute, let me find this because I wrote it down. I thought it was interesting. The best friend of the working man is the person who will give the job. The person who makes a profit is the best friend of those who want to be employed. And so if we're chasing those away, it's really hard. And you know, back to this same contractor, some of those employees who left him are now on unemployment.
Say that again, what?
Some of the employees who left him are now on unemployment.
And that's typically when you start a business in a given place, you will continue to run your business in that place and grow the business in
yes.
that place. And that is where we're losing our entrepreneurial talent, right there. We're losing, well, for example, I have Cerner in my district. Cerner was virtually nothing, not that many years ago, and now look at it. But if he had started someplace else and they happen to live someplace else, we wouldn't have that here. So, Senator, I appreciate your inquiry. I know mm-hmm. there are one or two other folks that want to say some things,
right.
and I know that we've got some opponents that want to say some things, and we want to give them, as you conducted your hearing in a fair manner, I believe that we're going to have an opportunity for everybody to have a little bit of say here today. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. President.
Senator.
I'd like to inquire of the Senator from Buchanan.
Senator from Buchanan, would you yield?
Yes, Mr. President.
He does. Please proceed.
Senator, now you represent an area that's a little, well, a neighbor to mine, but also farther north. And once again, even though we have a neighboring area, you also have an area that borders Kansas. And you probably see even more of the loss of jobs over the Kansas border than do I.
Well, there is a lot of that. A lot of jobs are going to Kansas simply because of the fact that we don't have a right-to-work law in the state of Missouri.
And so tell me just a little bit more about your take on that, because I know you're a physician. I know you have a methodical, you have a very logical way of thinking about arriving at a conclusion, and I know that this was something that you gave a lot of thought to.
Well, it was the same things that you've been talking about. I was on the committee that heard your bill, and you know, we heard from the consultant of the company that recommends business ventures that are going to be going into various states.
Right.
And they said that 50% of the people that they are contacted by say their number one criteria is the state a right-to-work state? And if it's not, they don't even consider it. So Missouri loses out on half of them right off the top.
Right.
And in the other half, about half of them have it as a high priority that it not be a right-to-work state for them to go there because it's just a hassle factor for them. And so Missouri has lost out tremendously, you know, over the years because of the fact that that it isn't a right-to-work state. You know, one of the states that changed their law was Oklahoma. And I have here a report about Oklahoma, and if you'd like, Senator, I'd like to read just a little bit of it.
Let me have the data that you have. Yeah, that'd be great.
I'm sorry?
I said I'd like to know what you've got there. Yeah.
Okay. This report is about the state of Oklahoma, and it says that from 1984 through 1994, the decade before the committee program to pass a right-to-work law in Oklahoma was initiated, private sector employment in Oklahoma increased by less than a third as much as the national average, according to the U.S. Labor Department. Over that same decade, inflation-adjusted U.S. Commerce Department data show Oklahoma's real personal income grew by just 2.3%, less than a tenth of the nationwide percentage gain. And then it goes on to talk about what happened in 1994. The seeds of change were planted when, thanks to the lobbying and citizen mobilization efforts, 12 new avowed foes of compulsory unionism were elected to the Oklahoma legislature. Also in 1994, unabashedly pro-right-to-work candidates were elected as governor, lieutenant governor, and labor commissioner. And then it says that from 1995 to 2001, the year the right-to-work law was finally adopted, private sector employment in Oklahoma grew by 15.2%, 14% more than the overall national increase. Sooner's real personal income grew by 24.1%, outpacing the national average. And Oklahoma, as you know, was the most recent state to enact a right-to-work law. And since that time, they have been the number one growth economy of all the states.
And that is startling information. I mean, when you've got that kind of information with a growth in an economy, and I realize that they continue to look at more things. I know the new Oklahoma governor campaigned on working on restructuring their whole tax structure, maybe getting rid of the income tax, moving over to a sales tax. But nonetheless, that in and of itself gives us a snapshot of even in a tough economic time. I realize, you know, I suppose it all levels itself out because we came up to 2008 and then all of a sudden we crash. Mm-hmm. But even with that, they had growth in personal income. They had job growth.
Right. And there's so much information that shows that areas that have right to work grow faster than areas that don't. And then you can look at the cities that have that are in states that have right to work. They grow faster and do better than cities that are in non-right to work states.
And as the senator from Stoddard noted, we have a lot of budget woes directly due to the fact that we have so many unemployed Missourians. Now, the whole issue, you'd mentioned the phrase compulsory unionism, and I know sooner or later we're going to have some opponents standing up here saying there is no such thing as compulsory unionism in the United States. And I take issue with that, because if the union comes in and negotiates to be the exclusive bargaining agent, then that is exactly what they have bargained for. Every person who comes to work there through that exclusive bargaining agent contract, they do bargain for them, but that's because that's what the union contracted for.
Right, and they don't have to do that, as we
heard.
No, they
don't.
As we heard, and you know, we heard conflicting testimony. One was from a Mr. Gladney. You remember, he was the attorney.
I remember him.
And
yeah.
And he said that that there were free riders, and that under the law they would have to bargain for everyone. And so I asked him for the cases, which then I went and obtained those cases, and those cases are not on point. They, one of them was from Missouri, and it was a Missouri case, and it wasn't at all on point. It didn't say, the court's ruling didn't say anything about that issue, nor did the other one that he gave me. So I wrote and I asked the National Right to Work Organization, and they sent me information that of their legal opinion that basically said that you can have members-only contracts, and it's just that they are not common because the union doesn't want them.
Right, and that's I think that is a key point right there. The unions, when they come in and become and take that contract for an exclusive bargaining agent, they are signing themselves up to to be the exclusive bargaining agent and to represent everyone. They don't have to bargain for that. They can bargain for a members-only contract,
but
they generally don't want that.
They can, and you know, it doesn't have to be that there are free riders, and that was an important point to me. You know, I thought that it was very important to sort that out, and I think that I did sort that out.
Well, that's important because I was just on a talk show a little bit earlier today, and the whole issue, I'm just going to call it the freeloader issue, came up, that apparently there is some opinion out there that the union members will not belong to the union, they won't pay their union dues, and they'll freeload on the backs of other people who are paying their union dues. But that has not been the experience in right-to-work states. And so if that be the... Once again...
As much as we enjoy everyone to come and listen to the debate, we need to maintain the decorum of the Senate, so please keep outbursts, commentary, laughter, and things to a minimum while the senators debate. Thank you.
Senator, you know, I agree with the senator from Stoddard. It's just really kind of nice to have people here and participating. Not participating, maybe that'd be a bad thing. But it is kind of nice to have people actually paying attention.
Yes, so, it is.
And also, once again, it's part of the freedom and the fairness that's going to happen here is that I've talked to some other people and we'll have an opportunity for other folks that, you know, that they can have their say.
Well,
but
Senator,
we need to get some of this information out.
I voted for this bill not because I want to hurt unions, but because I want to help the state of Missouri. And this bill has the potential to help the state of Missouri and help the workers in Missouri, because there wouldn't be any workers if there weren't the businesses to support them.
Absolutely.
And if we attract more businesses, good jobs, there will be more jobs available for the workers. And this proposal, that your bill, it doesn't say that anybody can't be in the union. We already have right to work in Missouri for our state employees.
Right.
They don't have to be in the union when they're a member of the state union. So we already have right to work, and it seems to be working fine for those in the state employees. So, you know, all this bill really says is that you have the freedom to decide. If you believe that the union is representing you well, you would join. And if you don't think that the union is representing you well, and by the way, we have data that a significant number of union members would rather not pay their dues, then you wouldn't have to. You would have freedom. But as it is, there is forced unionism on the individual level. If you work at a factory or at a business where the union has the contract, I'm sorry, but if you don't pay your dues, you're not going to get to work there.
No, they show you the door. And that apparently is a major, major problem with regard to not only worker freedom and their right to associate with who they want to, work where they want to, but it's also apparently a major factor in our ability to attract jobs.
So I guess what I'm saying is that in states where they have right to work, the unions are still flourishing, so we're not really hurting them. And in states where they have right to work, the employees have the freedom to choose, but in states where they have right to work, they have more businesses going to their state. They have the development of more jobs, so I just don't understand why workers wouldn't want that for Missouri.
Well,
I mean, don't they want to have more jobs?
Well, apparently the workers in Kansas are very content to stay and grow in Kansas because Missouri lost population, and yet all they have to do is move across the street in a large area. Senator, I know that you're quoting from some studies, and I know you've told us where those studies came from. I want to get something out here that there may be in the future somebody who's going to quote from a study from the Economic Policy Institute. I wanted to know where the Economic Policy Institute, where they were coming from and who was on their board of directors and what was happening. And so anything from the Economic Policy Institute is very suspect, because when I looked at their board of directors, it was made up of people who have a vested interest in the outcome of the study, because they're largely union members. I do have a study that was performed by Zogby and the Mackinac Center, and I'll tell people where I get these studies. I don't have any problem doing that. As far as I know, there was no Zogby, well recognized. They poll Republicans, Democrats, liberals, conservatives. And the question was asked of union population, do you think it is fair or unfair for a worker to lose their job if he or she refuses to pay dues to or support a union? Fair was 32%, unfair was 63%. 63%. That's amazing to me. And I'll share that study with anyone who wants to try to pick it apart. But that is the heart and soul of what we're getting to, is not that unions can't exist, because they do exist. They exist and they do well in 22 states. I don't believe that the opponents to this legislation would seriously stand before us and say there's absolutely no sense in having a union or belonging to a union in those 22 states that are right-to-work states. Frankly, because it just wouldn't be true. They choose to belong, and they work well for their members there. But, Senator, I don't know, what would you have to say in conclusion to all of this? Because I know, again, you've served in the House, you've been around these halls for a while, us try different economic development devices.
Well, my feeling is just, once again, is that this isn't about hurting unions. Unions are good. They have their place. They have helped a lot of people. And this isn't about hurting them. This is about helping the workers by making Missouri a more vibrant economy and bringing more good-paying jobs to Missouri. And this will help to do it. That's what it's all about.
Very good. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. President.
Senator.
I would like to inquire of the Senator from Howell.
Senator from Howell does not appear to be in the chamber. Mr. Sergeant of Arms, please summon the Senator from Howell to the Senate floor. Senator from Howell, the Senator from Clay has asked to inquire of you. Would you yield?
I yield.
Does please proceed.
Well, Senator, here we are again. You yet represent even a different area of the state, South Central Missouri. And we've heard from a lot of senators from a lot of different areas of the state on this particular issue. But I know the budget and the economy of the state of Missouri. You're a former member of the Appropriations Committee. You and I have struggled through appropriations during a very, very tough time in our state's history. What's your thoughts on all this?
Earlier, well, thank you for the inquiry. Earlier, you said you could see what from your house?
I can see Kansas from, well, not from my house, but from my district.
I thought you'd almost say Russia from your house. Well, I can
see Russia.
I can see Arkansas from my house.
You can see Arkansas from your house?
That's no lie. I can actually see Arkansas.
Seriously?
I thought through redistricting I might represent Arkansas someday, but so far that hasn't happened.
I think the Senator from Stoddard's got that wrapped up.
Yeah. You know, it's ironic is, you know, I've been in a meeting last half hour or so discussing economic development and how we as a state compete. You know, and right now, what are we, $700 million a year in tax credits? Now, we haven't redeemed that much this year because in times of low economy, there's not a lot of development going on. But during the heyday of the tax credits, we were spending about $700 million a year in tax credits. And that, to me, you know, we've had our ups and downs and arguments on tax credits, but the fact is that the budget this year is about $400 million short. We're looking at an $800 million shortfall next year. And when 60% of your state requires 60% of your revenue to your state comes from withholding. If we don't have people working, if you don't have a 5% unemployment rate or lower, you're never going to be able to balance a budget, because our budget is built on withholding taxes.
Wait a minute. If we don't have 5% or lower unemployment at our current budget, we can't balance our budget.
It makes it extremely difficult, because that's our biggest chunk of income is withholding taxes.
Without making cuts.
And I read John Combest, I think it was in Saturday, the state lost 10,100 jobs last month.
Right.
Is that what I read in John Combest?
I think so.
We're not turning it around. We're actually beginning the process of growing unemployment again, which is going to make it increasingly difficult to balance a budget. So what you got to do is, you know, I come at this different. You know, I'm a former union member. I was a member of a local grocery store union, probably one of the only union jobs in my district growing up, graduated from high school and went to work. And I enjoyed it. We made good money, but for the area, it was basically priced out of existence after a while, and now that grocery store chain has gone under, so all them jobs disappeared. Well, and then I went to Colorado and was an iron worker in Colorado during some of the boom times there. So, you know, I'm looking at this from totally economic development. And we're getting our clock clean, not only as a state, but as a nation. You know, we're losing our industrial base. You know, states can do what they need to do, but the federal government also, you know, you've got work issues, labor issues, you've got environmental issues, and you've got tax issues that we're not competing with the rest of the world on. And we as a state are not keeping up a competitive advantage to try to draw industry into our state. And this, you know, this alone is not going to fix it, but it is a tool in the toolbox that allows us to go out and compete on not only a statewide, but also a global competition area.
Were you in the committee hearing room when we talked about some of the high-tech jobs with regard to data centers?
Well, I listened to the testimony, and I thought the most telling testimony was the informational testimony, and I believe he said out of 12 companies that look at coming to Missouri, six of them are immediately taken out because we do not fit the criteria of a right-to-work state. But, you know, by the same token, you can ask the question is, how many companies of the 12 request to go to areas that are not right-to-work? And the answer was zero.
And that is a critical statement for Missouri's future in getting jobs to our state. Well, good-paying jobs, high-tech jobs, jobs of all nature are impacted by this. When you have people who don't have any stake in the outcome of this legislation whatsoever telling you that half of the manufacturers will not consider us because we're not right-to-work state, 30% of the rest won't consider us because we're not right-to-work, but not one comes to them and says, I have as my first criteria, this must be a non-right-to-work state.
We have to, as a nation and state, have to manufacture things. We will never make it as a service-driven economy. There's only so many jobs at McDonald's and the fast food spots. We have to actually manufacture things, and that's what's frustrating. We're losing our manufacturing base. It is state policy and it's national policy. We're losing that manufacturing base, and what we have to do is try to figure out how we're going to get that back, how we are going to again manufacture autos and be in the running to manufacture autos in this state. You know, you can drive by, it's not my district, but you know, during the campaigns this last year, I drove by the Fenton plant. Was it 5 million square feet for rent there? And you drive by knowing that it ain't coming back.
No.
Until we change our policies in this state and nation, it's not coming back.
Or, and then unless we so impossibly, which is something that we cannot do,
raid the treasury of the state of Missouri to pour it over into corporate coffers. We can't do it.
Well, the federal government's doing that now, a tune of $14 trillion
in
debt, trying to, because we've lost our manufacturing base. We're not producing what we used to produce in this country. You know, I had an email, and I'll go quickly on it because it was, but a guy gets up out of bed from his, he said he pulled, threw off his covers of the sheets made in Indonesia, put on his slippers made in Pakistan, went to get his coffee cup made in China, poured the coffee from someplace that come from Brazil, and he grabbed the newspaper and started looking at job wanted ads.
Yeah.
And wondered why there were no jobs out there, because we've lost our manufacturing base. So what you have to do is you have to be in the process of finding out what we're doing wrong and changing that. And in the state, if you want to look at the auto industry, we have some terms in the Ozarks, but we're spitting in the wind if we think we are going to get an auto manufacturing plant, a new one in this state. You and I disagreed on the Ford plant, but And one side will say we have to throw incentives at it. Well, I disagreed with throwing $100 million worth of incentives just to keep what we've got.
Yeah, as I said before,
we didn't save one job.
Right, we treaded water.
We just kept what we had for a little while.
Right.
But it'll eventually leave because of competition. You know, Ford went to Tennessee, but you know what? If you look at, there is a nice, well, it's not a nice, but there's a video on the internet of a plant they built in Brazil. They're gradually going to Brazil because of the overhead on producing automobiles. And unless we turn this around globally, their stop off is in Tennessee, but they'll end up in Brazil because they can manufacture a cheaper product at a cheaper price that we'll turn around and buy because we don't care where stuff comes from anymore as long as it's cheap.
Yeah.
But we've got to be able to start competing to manufacture those vehicles in this country. And when you have situations where foreign car manufacturers look at states and immediately they say, we will not go there because they are not right to work, our job as a legislature is to try to create a new generation of jobs for these kids that we're trying to educate now in high school and college, for my kids. You know, and we have to be able to compete and draw those jobs in here to manufacture things, or otherwise our kids are going to grow up at McDonald's and in the service economy that will not service our debt and continue to pay for the bills that we have to pay.
Well, Senator, actually, there's one thing that you said that you said we here in America don't care where things come from anymore. There's one thing that I'm almost positive that I can agree with a lot of the folks that are paying good attention here today. I do care where something comes from because I care about the quality. And
well,
I drive an American-made vehicle, because I want to.
Well, we talked about that during the Ford debate. I have my truck, and you can go look at my truck. It's parked in the basement. It's a 2000 Ford with 182,000 miles on it.
And I got a 2004.
I will never buy a GM now because I will not buy a vehicle that the government has anything to do with.
Yeah,
so
well, I'm
a
I got
Ford,
mine before the government had something to do with it.
I'm a Ford person now, and
I'll
let my Dodge
my
pickup.
District. Thank you.
I'll let my Dodge pickup that's got 160,000 miles on it continue to be a farm truck. But if I ever am able to buy a good used vehicle again, because I've never actually bought a new one, I always buy them 3 years old after they've depreciated, it'll be a Ford vehicle because they didn't take government bailouts, even though they did take a state bailout, a state tax credit that was approved by this body.
Right.
But GM, they weren't rescued by the government, rescued with printed dollars from China by our government, and they were competing. So my Ford and Dodge, and so.
Well,
but, the whole thing is, I lose jobs to Arkansas. Economic development people in my area say they have lost jobs that were looking to come to my district because, 5 miles from my house and 15 miles from the West Plains area is Arkansas. So they go to Arkansas if that is a factor that makes that decision. So I'm basically losing those jobs, and I'm not competing. So we're up here now, you know, I'm working on a tax credit bill trying to figure out a way that Kansas and Missouri can compete because we're getting our clock cleaned right now.
And we're bleeding.
And trying to figure out a way that we can continue to pay for it. And this is another area that we have to try to be able to compete. You know, you can't have unions if you don't have jobs in a manufacturing base. Yeah. You know, it's not much to be good being a union if you're unemployed. And the way you can make the employment strong is to have a vibrant manufacturing base. And we're not being able to compete right now.
Well, and the other thing that we're not able to compete for, that we have tried and tried and tried to make a success and appeal to and get around the Ford plant in Clay Como, is all the different suppliers. But we can't get a supplier part. We've tried this tool and that tool, and to this date, we don't have it. Now, we do have suppliers strewn about through the different counties in the state of Missouri and also some neighboring states. But those are the small businesses that provide so much of our jobs. And when we, just like when we lost the plant over on the St. Louis side, we lose not only those jobs and those families, but what the devastation that it does to the neighborhoods and what it does to the small businesses that are so dependent upon those jobs there, whether because they're a supplier or whether because they're the barber or the diner. Those jobs are critical and they're important, and they pay well, and we respect that. And that's why that, yes, we did disagree with regard to the Missouri Manufacturers Act, but that's part of the reason that I came down on the side that I came down on, is that we're losing so many jobs we just couldn't afford to lose any more. But again, you make a very valid point.
Well, you know, we disagreed on that. We bought jobs we already had.
Yep.
They didn't, you know,
it's
and
true.
That's not making headway.
It,
you know, what we need is a new automotive plant or a new manufacturing plant to come in, because those are new jobs. And when we're losing out on 50% of them right off the top, right, that's not being competitive with the states that are surrounding us. And that is not going to have a healthy environment for my daughter when she graduates from college, of having a quality job that she can go out and compete for. And that's what we should be about, is not the special interest, but what it takes to make Missouri a player when it comes to a world economy. You know, I live in the Ozarks. We're behind times, but we can figure this out. That when every day you hear about competing in a global economy, and we're not doing it right now, and we have got to do better at it and come up with the tools in the toolbox that we can go out and compete. Because right now, you know, we're around 10% unemployment. You know, I have never figured out, you know, when it comes to government, was it Mark Twain that says there's lies, damn lies, and statistics?
Right.
Have you ever figured out, and I remember when we were losing 400,000 jobs a week and the unemployment barely ticked up.
Yep.
And then we gained 125 jobs and it dropped 4 points. I'm trying to figure out how they play with the numbers, and what I found out is they're reducing the amount of employable, the pool of workers, so that the numbers don't really aren't accurate, because the people that have quit looking for work aren't included, and you know those people are unemployed too. I've got those people in my area that have just given
up
looking for work.
Like that, or they're near and dear to me.
And they also don't count the people that are underemployed. In other words, the guy that was working driving a cement truck for $21 an hour, now working at McDonald's for $7 an hour, he is not making the standard of living that he can continue to pay, make his house payment, yet he's taken off the unemployment rolls. But he is still basically unemployed per se, because he's not making the money that he used to make that services.
Or the computer programmer that got laid off and is now working as a guard at Crown Center.
Right.
That's exactly the type of thing,
you know,
that's happening.
Right now, you know, go through the newspaper and find out how many manufacturing jobs at a high wage that there are out there, and there's not that many. And if they are there, there's 200 or 300 applications for them. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Even in the high tech area, whenever a person that I know was laid off from a high tech job and then tried to reapply to some of the jobs that were open,
He was connected with a person who was in human relations at the new high-tech place that was advertising a job. There were over 2,000 applicants in the Kansas City area for that one Kansas City area job. And we just, I mean, union, non-union, we've got to start tearing every barrier down that we can possibly remove to getting people back to work in our state.
Well, what we've been doing isn't working very well.
Obviously.
We've got to do what we can as a state government. We've got a federal government that we have to somehow learn to control spending. Because as long as they're borrowing and printing money, it's very hard to invest in this economy knowing that you're going to be able to, knowing that the printing of money causes hyperinflation and rising prices. So we all need to work together on this, and this is an idea that I think will work. And I commend you for bringing it forward.
Thank you. I appreciate the inquiry, Mr. President.
Senator.
I would like to inquire of the senator from Newton, and in all fairness to some of the other folks who are waiting to speak, that he may be one of the last people that I would inquire of.
The senator from Newton does not appear to be in the chamber. Sergeant of Arms, please summon the senator from Newton to the Senate floor. Senator from Newton, the senator from Clay has asked to inquire of you. Do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator, for the inquiry. Senator, you represent yet another area of the state that's down in the southwest corner. And I know that you've been around these halls. You're the former speaker. You've watched a lot of economic development proposals work, fail, succeed down here, get through with maybe minimal success. What are your thoughts with regard to this?
I've traveled with governors of both parties doing economic development. I've carried legislation for governors of both parties, understanding that job creation shouldn't be or may not be political. It should be job creation should be something we all agree on. I started years ago with Governor Holden, traveled with him a couple of times. We met with the representatives of Toyota when they were finishing their Ford plant in San Antonio, Texas, because there was a Toyota looks about three or four plants out. And they were looking to build something in northeast Arkansas. And the question was asked, why wouldn't they go over to Sikeston or Cape or somewhere across instead of Arkansas or Tennessee? And Toyota had a short list. And most of the automotive manufacturers did have a short list. Among those was Right to Work. They will not go to a state and manufacture Toyotas for the most part, although Toyota did do some things in Ann Arbor and some things. For the most part, unless they won't go to somewhere other than Right to Work state. That's one of the things. I mean, low tax rates, lawsuit reform that needed to be fixed, workers' comp rates that are decent. But of the four or five things, there is a checklist that if you believe that we want to manufacture cars in Missouri again, the foreign companies will not look at a state. And the proof is where they locate. If you look at BMW, Kia, Toyota, Nissan. I visited with Nissan over in Tennessee, and they had the same comment. I had the privilege to travel with Governor Blunt, and the same thing happened in some conversations. I went to China and visited with the Chinese a year and a half ago and reported back to Governor Nixon, and the same comment. I traveled with a contingent of speakers and presidents and majority leaders of the Senate of mostly Democrats, mostly in the South, Virginia, Alabama, Tennessee, Louisiana. And the conversation when we got to Beijing and met with a couple of the ambassadors, they had said that they were looking to come to the United States and build some plants for whatever purposes, chemical plants and whatever. I don't recall what they were looking to build. And I asked after the conversation, the president of the Senate of Virginia, the Speaker of the House from Arkansas, and the Speaker of the House from Alabama, Seth Hammett, went up and told this ambassador that they were right to work and they'd like to do business with the Chinese, and the Chinese said, we like doing business in your states too. And I was kind of left dumbfounded, and the only thing I could comment on was the China hub and the fact that we have one of the most outstanding efforts in training workers and a trained workforce of any state in the Midwest, including the South. And I talked about our trained workforce, and I talked about the China hub and the fact that we're trying to work on a Federal Express type of Memphis, Tennessee, of exporting agriculture goods over the North Pole and bring back goods from Southeast Asia. The conversation then went to the speaker of Arkansas, and I said, does right to work make a big difference in your state? He said, absolutely. And I said, well, do you have union presence in Arkansas? He said, yeah, we have one of the biggest tire manufacturing union plants in Texarkana. I asked the Speaker of Alabama and the President of the Senate of Virginia, I said, would you go back to a non-right to work if you had a chance? They said, no, it gives us the edge over the rest of the country. It lets us compete. And like I say, that's just one issue. Right. You have to be able to have a decent tax rate, have worker comps rates, have to have a good training program,
energy,
et cetera,
costs,
et cetera.
Probably another one.
Pardon?
Energy costs is probably another one.
Cheap energy, where Missouri is actually in better shape than most of the other states as far as cheap energy. You need to have good ports. That's why it's important that we have deep water barges coming up the Mississippi, et cetera, et cetera. But
right.
That I have been somewhat neutral about my reporting to governors of what I see and what I hear, and I thought it was my responsibility as chair of economic development to give the governors exactly the truth that I hear from companies that are going to want to expand in the states. And we had that Chrysler plant in Fenton. Missouri had a $1 billion package trying to keep Chrysler, and we thought we had another platform that we're going to be able to use Volkswagen, build Volkswagens out there.
Uh-huh.
And that didn't happen. St. Louis County had the biggest part of the package. Missouri had part of it, and so did the city of Fenton, and that didn't happen. It went to Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Which is a right-to-work state.
And, you know, I don't know if that's a coincidence or if there's something else going on. It's just...
Well, and so that people have an idea of how much that is, you said that was a $1 billion package. At the time, that was what, 1/20th of our state budget?
Whatever it was. You know, when you go after big jobs and big events like that, it may be once in a lifetime, so... My goal was to lay your cards on the table and not keep a couple cards back and try to be able to compete the best we could. And unfortunately, we didn't get that. Now they're tearing down the buildings and selling for scrap metal and what have you. But I drove by that plant for years and years, and it's unfortunate that's not in Fenton. I will tell you that if you don't believe me, just look to the South and look what's going on in Texas through Alabama and Georgia. BMW didn't go and Mercedes didn't go to those states just by accident. You're right about consultants going where they get the best deal, and that's just the name of the game. When you have to compete, you hire a consultant, they go out and they get the best deal. And is it a bidding war? Yes, it is. Is it a giveaway program? Probably. But that's the way the tax policy is. That's the way the game's played. You have to bid on it, and you have to work to get it.
Well, and Senator, I think it's important also to make another point here that I think some of the opponents will say, well, they located there because it's the Sun Belt and it's pretty and it's really nice. I've had some people make that argument to me. I said, but the Dakotas are nice. Wyoming is nice. Colorado is nice. The New England states are beautiful. California is beautiful. Oregon is beautiful. And yet they're not going there. And so I think we can take at least, you know, we can answer that argument that, well, they just went there because it was the sunny South and everybody wants to hang out in the sun. I don't think that's a valid argument. They're going for other reasons. And I would agree, as I've said before, this is not the total answer, but it's clear to me after being down here now for 17 years that it is a necessary part of the answer to turn Missouri's job environment around and to make us attractive to high-paying, good jobs with good benefits, because we're just sliding down the hill of seeing more and more Fenton Chrysler plants, or what used to be Fenton Chrysler plants.
Well, Senator, all I can do is tell you the truth, what I've heard and what I've reported to governors of different administrations, and what people have told me, and what interaction with other states, other elected officials, presidents of the Senate and speakers, and that's just all I know is the truth to tell you.
Well, and I appreciate you doing that, and I appreciate that folks up here have listened. Just the rules of the Senate are such that once I sat down and the other folks that are probably more in line with their beliefs, they'll stand up and they'll continue, but we had to go through this exercise so that we could make sure and get all of our points out before I do anything as far as relinquishing the floor for more debate. And so I appreciate the inquiry, I appreciate your experience, and I appreciate your support in this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on Senate Bill 1 and Senate Bill 206? The senator from the 11th, for what purpose are you seeking recognition?
Mr. President, may I inquire briefly of the senator from Clay?
The senator from Clay, would you yield?
Just when everybody was hoping I'd sit down, yes, I yield.
She does proceed.
Senator, thank you for yielding. I know you have been up for a while, and I'm just going to keep this brief.
I'll do my best to answer your question.
Last
Senator.
Week, the Senate, despite you and I's opposition, passed an at-will bill.
A what?
Which, the at-will doctrine, the whistleblower doctrine.
I'm sorry, I refer to that to the sovereign immunity, no punitive damages bill, but I
well,
know
what
I
want to get to is, the individual in society has two, at least in theory, places to protect them, right, in the workplace. In theory, if the courts work, at least theoretically, ethically, morally, whatever, that employee can meet that employer on even ground in court. Now, in reality, it might be far different, but that's the courts are the great leveler in society, at least theoretically.
Well,
so an employee has a grievance.
At least theoretically,
right.
But in practicality, because obviously the employer can hire attorneys
I'm just talking,
to fight
I agree with you
can.
That probably the deck is well stacked even against the employee, even in court, but just in theory. Now, in society, the individual has that protection. And you and I oppose that bill because that gave the rights to an employer just to get rid of somebody for telling the truth. I found it very interesting.
Actually, I oppose it for a different reason.
Well.
But okay, I'll give you that.
If they
okay.
saw something
I know why
wrong,
you opposed
you,
it.
You had a problem with the whistleblower part that was, if they saw something wrong and reported it, you had an amendment that said, look, it doesn't have to be illegal. Maybe it's just bad.
I didn't think that they had to be the judge, jury, prosecutor.
Right, I agree with you.
Right.
And so I guess I found it interesting that the senator from the 7th, in quoting Samuel Gumpers, said that it's your best friend, your employer is your best friend, because I guess if that bill becomes law, your best friend will fire you if you tell him the truth.
Well, only if you're telling the truth and you're wrong. Only
so,
if you tell him
okay.
you're wrong.
Okay, all right. And by the way, if it's illegal, I just...
Right.
I know Samuel Gumpers maybe referred
but
to
they are
best
right
friend,
in that the UAW doesn't have a job if there is no Ford Motor Company, and all those guys and gals that were working at the Fenton plant don't have jobs
so
anymore.
So here's my point that I'm getting to.
Okay.
Outside the courts, the only place the employer, the employee, can meet the employer on even ground, and it's probably stacked against the employee even here, is to have an election collective and with the other employees and say, look, on my wages, on my benefits, on my future, I have a right to be at the table and discuss that with my employer. And he has to meet with me. And he can't just isolate me, and he can't just cut a deal with 19 independent contractors. He's got to deal with us, because while I am an individual, the power of one becomes the power of many. I'm saying is, if on the one hand we're saying the courts, and you and I had concerns that this legislature in 6-6, and I guess according to some business groups, it's up to
five
7.
Alive.
So we'll be in 7 if it's we'll be in heaven if it's 7.
4 is more.
It'll be great if it's 8, and won't be fine if we're in 9. I mean, I don't know when the.
I think 1's the loneliest number. I'm not sure that they're going to get
up
that
with
far.
These things, but anyway, so I guess what I was wondering is, with this bill, it's a removal of that individual's right, while it refers to the collective. If that collective right to meet the employer face-to-face for wages, benefits, the future of this employee, if that is degraded, just like the other bill degraded their ability in court, what sort of society are we creating?
If you'll permit me, and I
yeah,
know you
ahead.
And I disagree on this, and I think it's important to pull out the differences. We've had it said by several people here is that we believe that unions have a very good role to play in particularly our private workforce. I would probably disagree with you more vehemently with regard to the public, but okay, let's look at the private workforce. They've done some tremendous things. My grandfather was a miner. I know about things like that, and I know about the conditions that were there. However, here's a situation that now we are competing for manufacturing jobs, we're competing on a different field, and I don't believe that you would make the argument that in the 22 states that are right-to-work states that those unions are of no benefit and they might as well not exist in those 22 states. I believe that they do provide value to the working person. I do believe that there is a valid reason for them to pay their union dues. I do believe that they do a good job collectively bargaining, but there is the fact also that when we're looking ahead to how do we get more competitive for new jobs, and I know you're going to disagree with this.
Yeah.
I believe that I have come to now believe that there is one element that is so startling and so obvious when we look at the maps of population changes and job changes and congressional representation that we have to look at this. And I do believe that the unions continue to do a good job in Kansas and Arkansas and Nebraska and Iowa as well as they are in Missouri. But there is one thing that is different, and that is their ability to get jobs that we can't get. And ultimately, the only way that I can be the best friend to the working person is for them to be able to have a job and kill this 10% unemployment rate that we know of. And I know we're going to disagree
with
that.
Yeah, let me just ask you one other thing. I was fascinated at the discussion that you had from the senator from Howell. Because, and the senator from, where is he from?
I don't know.
Anyway.
Newton?
He's from somewhere. anyway, these new people, you know, have confused me. The senator from Newton.
Senator, I know where you're from. The 11th.
I guess what I'm saying is we have been completely handcuffed from some of our, and I think you've heard this from the senator from the 10th, in our ability to pass economic development bills, reforms, incentives, whatever it is. And am I to understand now that you're saying that right to work replaces the incentives, or are you now saying – And you did support the Ford bill. You did support the Bombardier proposal, I remember, which was a huge amount of cash.
Yep.
We couldn't give it to them up front. We couldn't give it to them up front.
Right.
But, and I guess what I'm saying is, are you now for the incentives?
Senator, what I am for, actually, probably not in the way that you're talking about, because I am tired of taking money from this group of people over here and transferring it over for the potential of a French corporation or this corporation or even the United States corporation. We can't keep doing it. We're busted. We can't do it. So no, until we get the job market turned around, there is one thing with regard to this legislation does not, just like the workers' compensation legislation, just like unemployment compensation that I worked on so diligently with the senator from the 13th a number of years ago, that there are things that we can do to improve our ability to compete for jobs that do not require us to raid the treasury of the state of Missouri. And I think we have to turn our attention to every single thing that we can do to put in that arsenal over there to compete for good-paying jobs. I know we're going to disagree with how we get there, but sure. I have come to believe that this is part of the recipe that will be necessary for us to compete, certainly on our side of the state, because as you know, the jobs and the people that take them are going across the border, and I know there's a lot of reasons for that, but apparently this is one based on the testimony that we've heard.
Now, one last question. I know you've been up for a while. One last question. The McCollum Sweeney Consulting Group, one thing I found curious, and maybe you can correct this, have they ever said what company didn't locate here? Did they ever say a company name? Just so you know, when I have heard that fact presented, you ask, well, what company or companies?
Actually,
and I always hear that it's a secret list, that they can't disclose right. it because it's hidden next to the secret Bombardier file, and it's on Funkin' Wagnall's porch. It's new
right.
today in a mayonnaise jar,
and
I just am wondering, trying to figure out the combination, because I'd love to see it.
I think I can get that for you, because actually, Senator, your question is extremely valid, and I asked that question myself, and I said, I want to know the specific announcement that is coming out. Senator, I apologize to you because that is one little bit of homework that I didn't do.
Okay.
Because I didn't expect you to ask it, but the thing that I can do is I will get it for you, because I asked him that and I said, I want to know it. And he said, there will be an announcement that we'll be able to make publicly. And actually, while we're debating this here on the floor, I may, if I get the opportunity to do it, go down to the website and just find it.
Sure. I mean, it's just a question. I just wanted to factually evaluate what these guys said.
You were in the committee, I believe, where we talked about the data.
No,
centers.
I wasn't in the committee.
Okay.
I was not. The committee was so crowded that
you didn't.
I brought one witness down.
Well, and, you know, you're an important
And he was not
now.
Able to testify, and I think he went ahead and testified at the end.
He went ahead
because I left it in the able hands of the senator from Jefferson.
What I noticed is that whenever we, and able hands,
sure.
of the senator from Jefferson, well trained.
But anyway, I'm genuinely curious what companies, because the data centers, and I would just tell you, I heard you
right.
talk about the data centers, and by the way, I'm delighted to hear on the Senate floor that all these people are now for development. I mean, I thought there was all this issue about tax credits. We couldn't even talk about it because we haven't talked about it for 2 years, really. But I'm delighted to hear that now people are for the data centers. And I know the senator from Newton. I know the senator from Newton even has a bill. And I remember last year we couldn't get that bill through the Senate. So I'm happy to hear that we're now all for the data centers.
Senator, don't bet on it yet.
Okay. Okay, well, I just want to make sure when we get that
of it,
Chinese infusion and the Japanese investing here that, anyway,
Senator,
with regard to
the data centers, I did ask the next question is, and it was your question.
Right.
Where did we lose them to and who did we lose?
And who were they?
And Google, Yahoo. There's another one. I don't know the name. It's like 1&1 or S&1 or something like that. I didn't recognize it. Another banking venture.
I just would
Bank
note,
of America,
Senator, I just wanted to note. Yeah, I just wanted to note. I'm interested in the answer, but when asked that question, as I recall, the expert didn't state it. And I
at that time,
and maybe
he did not.
You know, again, I don't want to open up that mayonnaise jar and, you know, I want to keep it on Funk and Wagnalls Porch.
The mayonnaise jar is now open, and I will get that for you.
Okay. All right. Senator, thank you for the inquiry. Mr. President.
Senator from the 11th.
I have an amendment. And, Mr. President, I will have it distributed, and I assure you I will not close on the amendment.
Please send your amendment forward.
Until it
is asking for a waiver of the reading?
I would ask for a waiver of the reading as it is being currently distributed. And,
Senator, you may proceed with your motion to adopt the amendment.
I move the adoption of the amendment.
You will not be allowed to close until all members have received a copy of the amendment. You may proceed.
He took all my copies. Thank you. Anyway, Mr. President, I move the adoption of the amendment. Mr. President, before I get to my explanation of the amendment, I wanted to go over a couple things on the bill, but I am talking while I'm offering an amendment, so I did want to kind of go over some things that we heard in our presentation of the last 2 hours. Now, Mr. President, there's the problem with a dog whistle is that nobody hears it. You know, you're all familiar with a dog whistle. Only a dog can hear it. And there's a lot of these national firms or firms or regional firms that try to go around and say, well, we're going to bring business and we're experts and let me tell you about this. And there might be one called Sloppy Joe's and one called Fantas. And actually, the senator from Clay mentioned one that I'm not even going to quote from. You know what I'm going to do, Mr. President? I'm going to quote from McCollum Sweeney and what they've said about development in the last 5 years. And, Mr. President, Ed McCollum, McCollum Sweeney Consulting provides site selection services and economic developing consulting to states, governments, etc. The senior principal of the firm, Mark Sweeney, testified that many of his clients have not even considered looking at right-to-work states. But Mr. McCollum, as recently as January 2009, and he is the senior principal, said that corporate decision makers were becoming less concerned with labor costs and more concerned about access to universities with technical training and availability of healthcare facilities. Imagine that, healthcare. Only one to examine the current demographic of on aging to understand why healthcare is increasingly an important component of workforce recruitment and retention. Then in November of 2009, Ed McCollum, senior partner of the proponents of this bill's consulting firm, said the following. He said that according to a 2008 corporate survey, right-to-work status was the 13th most important site selection factor in business location. Number one, highway accessibility, construction costs, tax exemptions, and energy costs, proximity to local markets, etc., etc., etc. In the same article, Ed McCollum writes that concerning industry and labor, my, we should invite him to the Senate again, a constructive dialogue should be taking place, one that focuses on common ground instead of divisiveness in one that is not legislatively mandated in the discussion with labor. Now, the senator from Clay mentioned the absurd argument about climate and the South, which actually, I have the statistics, is 15 degrees warmer. That's why we fly down to Florida and we come back here and it's colder. Problem is, the expert McCollum Sweeney said the same thing. They blame the climate. In fact, in a 2005 article, McCollum explained the reason behind the South's success in high-tech industry, citing education, workforce training programs, and climate as the three key reasons for the South's success. So, I'm happy to hear that we're willing to talk about tax credits and incentives for business, and I have a suggestion when we get there. Let's build a biodome. Let's build a giant dome, just like you might find at the Cardinals or the Rams or, well, we never built one at Arrowhead, but let's build a whole dome over the state a biodome, and we can lower, we can raise the temperature by 15 degrees. We can just have a nice Missouri-shaped biodome so that we can attract business, because according to McCollum Sweeney, that's who did that. That was one of the factors of the South's success. So when we talk about this discussion and capital improvements, that biodome has got to create a lot of jobs if we build it all over the state. But this gets to I could go on ad nauseum, and at some point I will go on ad nauseum, about the things that Macaulay Sweeney has said, but they seem to have a very selective approach to the right to work issue, and they seem to bring it up when convenient, and then they go to other states and they talk about job training and all this sort of stuff. But this leads me to the other point. Now, you'll notice in the discussion that the Senator from Newton, Senator from Clay, Senator from Howell, all talked about foreign cars. We need to have foreign companies and get them here to put in assembly plants. Now, the problem with that is it wasn't right to work as the central issue. I've got news for you. Those big multinationals, and I know this will be shocking to you, wanted a whole load of taxpayer cash. When I was a little boy, the ice cream truck used to travel down my street. Ding dong, ding dong, ding dong. And I remember the man, he was an older man, he was a nice man, and you know, you'd go and get your ice cream, and he had one of those old-fashioned coin changers. Ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. So you'd hand him money, you'd hand him a dollar maybe if you had that, you've saved your allowance. I had to work for my allowance, but you'd ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. Well, let's talk about the South and these automotive plants, and let's talk most of all about the ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching from the taxpayers. Because there's a lot of ka-chinging going on with taxpayer money to these states. Now, all of these companies are foreign automotive makers. Foreign automotive makers. So these are southern states, states in the United States, not giving to Chrysler, not giving to GM. They're putting together incentive packages for these other states. Nissan in Tennessee got $127 million. That was part of their deal for 1,500 jobs. Ka-ching, ka-ching. Toyota in Mississippi got $330 million to put their plant for 2,000 workers. Ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. And lastly, my favorite is that BMW is unknown, unknown. Volkswagen in Tennessee, an often mentioned state, $555 million from their taxpayers to move there for 2,000 jobs. Now, the cost of Ford was $100-some-odd million to save those jobs there. The sponsor of the bill supported it because they recognized the importance of those jobs. But here's the other problem with these states that have ka-chinged out their cash. It doesn't stop there, and this is a distinction that we have to learn in this state. One reason that they're going there, the taxpayers are then hit up for all the job training. They have to provide that for the taxpayers. So when you hear about right to work today, and you hear about we've got to make this fair to the individual employee, the main argument that they're leaving out is all the ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching from all the hundreds of millions of dollars that other states have had to hand out to get these companies to locate there. And the other part they're going to leave out is the ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching of training dollars that those states have to do it. And it's pretty substantial. Out of the $555 million that went to BMW, $78 million was job training dollars. Out of the $330 million of Volkswagen, $80 million all paid for by the taxpayers. It wasn't run as part of an agreement between the contractors and the union that creates an apprenticeship program and a great job training program. It wasn't done by the union and the employer at the automotive plant to promote safety, to promote workforce training. It was paid for by those state taxpayers. Now, what's the consequence to those taxpayers? Because the other thing we heard was how wonderful everything is in the other states. Now, I could sit here and I could say, the Senate rules, as I recall, specifically state that I cannot say something unkind about another state. So I'm not. But I'm just going to give you the facts. And I don't want them to get any kind of feeling bad because I'm telling the statistics. I will give you a warning that Mississippi, in certain categories, doesn't rate very high. They are a big right-to-work state that's used a lot of their money to go get plants, and they have had to spend a lot of their taxpayer money on job training, and they have brought in lower-wage jobs to get that manufacturing, but it's had some consequences. Of the lowest states, this is according to the U.S. Census Bureau, so you know it's going to be right. This is just a couple of statistics. The proponents of the bill talked about how wonderful it is, and I want to just tell you how wonderful it really is. Of the bottom 15 states, in the attainment of those who've completed a bachelor's degree, 12 of them are right-to-work states. Of the average percentage of those achieving advanced degrees, it gets no better. In right-to-work state, the average is 8%. In non-right-to-work percent, it states it's 12.4%. The problem, Mr. President, is, and I wanted to touch on this in my inquiry, was that the proponents of this bill, it's an interesting that sort of philosophically, some of them would be supporting this bill because they are among the most vociferous critics of tax credits. And what I wanted to get to is I wanted to say, okay, for the last 3 to 4 years, we haven't been able to really pass a bill regarding tax credit reform. We haven't really been able to pass a bill beyond the Ford plant and maybe a couple of others about different tax credits. Now, while they cited McCollum Sweeney as their source, I'm on the Jobs Committee, and there's one person in the state capitol that actually has been in the room and has tried to negotiate deals with companies for jobs. And his name's David Kerr, and he's the Director of Economic Development. And those of you who don't know, he came from Kansas, our rival state. And I'm fond of telling him that it's a very good pickup for the state of Missouri. I'm a Chiefs fan, and it's precisely similar to picking up the offensive coordinator from the Raiders, because he knows what Kansas can put together. To the question, what is the most important legislative act we can do this session to add jobs to Missouri right now? His answer was not right to work. His answer was not fix the six. His answer was compete Missouri. He will tell you that we lose out for the very reasons the senator from Clay said, but we didn't emphasize. We don't have the ability, like southern states, to put money on the table up front. Whether that's a good idea or not, we don't have the ability to put deal closing or money up front. All of our whole economic development apparatus is after the facts. It's a tax credit redeemed. It's not the ability that many of the southern states have done of putting this money up front. And the southern states, in particular, have had a very difficult time with training. They don't have a pool of trained resources, so they revert. What do they revert to as part of that incentive? They revert to hitting up the taxpayers. Part of every proposal is hitting up the taxpayers for tens of millions of dollars. So when you hear the when you hear right to work, keep in mind it's going to be a big hit to Missouri of things that we're not paying for now that we're going to have to start paying for. Mr. President, if I might inquire of the senator from the 13th.
Senator from the 13th, would you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the 11th?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good afternoon, Senator.
Good afternoon.
Senator, I was wondering, there was a mention in the proponents of this bill that talked about Oklahoma as being a right-to-work state and that it had been a positive experience. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I have a briefing I want to go over with you on Oklahoma. Do you mind if I add on to some of the statements you have stated?
You're welcome to. I know we have a limited amount of time on this bill.
I do, but I want to make sure this is clear. I think economic development amongst state governments, one of these policy institutes, listed the issue of right to work at number 19. And it's from Area Development Magazine Corporate Survey. Highway accessibility is number one, and tax exemptions, which you just stated, is number three.
Well, Senator, let me just say I disagree with your expert.
You think
I have a
one?
Feeling, I have a feeling, and it's just me, that we can talk about infrastructure, we can talk about highly skilled workers, but having observed the business community for the last 8 years in this building, I have a feeling it's that money up front.
Well, I have continued to listen from the
because
Senator.
I have never met a group of people who want to get more of our money than anyone else.
Since the introduction of this bill, I have continually heard the Senator from Stoddard get on the radio. He's continued to say, I want some of those car plants, some of those other states get. We don't need to do anything but look to the movie Jerry Maguire. When Cuba Gooding Jr. gets Tom Cruise's agent on the phone and he says to him, show me the money.
Well,
Tom Cruise whispers, show me the money. He says, no. I want you to show me the money. That's all this is. Now, let me give you, add on a few of your statements, because I have listened for the last 2 hours to Senator from Clay, and I have heard this issue and this rant on right to work continuously. Stand here and say we can't give away government dollars, though when I was here in August, she stood on the floor and asked for $80 to $100 million for Ford auto plant in her district. You're either going to give them the money or you're going to stand on principle and say I'm against giving them the money. In the state of Alabama, as you stated, the Nissan plant, for each job that was produced, it cost the taxpayer $200,000. Tennessee, as you stated, $577 million. Another offering for their headquarters of $197 million, including $20 million in utility savings. So
Senator,
let's add $210 million to $577 million. We get to...
Senator, let me interrupt you. You've been in this building a long time. And you know, I haven't been in as long as you, but I don't know if you knew this, but I'm the most
$800
senior,
million.
I'm the most senior senator now, right?
Yes.
And I remember... And you probably remember these days, and they seem like long ago when Governor Blunt and there were the majority party in the House and Senate, and they were absolutely in love with tax credits. Tax credits for this, tax
we
credits
won't
for
even
that.
Debate
and
them
that
right
was going to bring back the economy, and that was going to do all this sort of stuff.
Actually, there's a meeting going on right now to deal with tax credits.
You and what's I that?
there's meetings going on about tax credits.
Well, I hope there are, but I'm just saying for the last 3 years, suddenly there was this great epiphany that, well, maybe we'd spent too much money. And here's the problem I have, and you know, I probably...
Well, if you would let me finish, because
I may not.
Listened. Okay. But we were close to $800 million for the auto plant in Tennessee.
Yep.
Mississippi, the package has increased to about $365 million. Originally, it was $300 million. In Texas, we heard about Texas, too. They gave a value package of roughly $180 million. Now, I do want to mention for everybody in the room, when we beat up on unions and building trades and PLAs on a separate issue, the auto plant in Texas was built with a project labor agreement. They demanded that it be built with union-trained workforce, but that's a different issue.
By the way, a lot of the stuff in Kansas, in Wyandotte County, was built with union workforce. I guess I'm just saying that Kansas is lucky to live next to a state that values its skilled workers, and they benefit from it because people drive from Missouri to sometimes go do that development in Kansas.
I've continued to hear throughout the debate about companies, especially, and I know the senator from Stoddard's passionate about his district, but there's a company in his district, and it was in the Post-Dispatch yesterday when I was reading, and it's called Mid-Continent Nail Corporation of Poplar Bluff, Missouri. What they're doing right now is they're fighting because China is making the nails much cheaper. China's violating the trade tariffs. They're shipping the nails to Taiwan and India, and they're stamping on the box from Taiwan and India and shipping them into the United States. Now, this small company in Poplar Bluff, Missouri, had to hire investigators to try to get the U.S. government to enforce its U.S. trade policies to help a small business. American companies have been vexing trade issues with China, where inexpensive labor, government subsidies, and predatory pricing can prove to be lethal to competitors. Companies like Mid-Continent turn the governor's International Trade Commission when they see evidence of dumping, exporting products at artificially low prices in hopes of killing the competition. If companies prove the allegations of dumping or unfair subsidies, the Commerce Department orders duties to bring prices on important goods in line with U.S. goods. The company is fighting a company in China to try to keep open. It's not organized labor and it's not right to work. It's the United States federal trade policy.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is, and I guess I get back to, here's the problem. Some of the proponents of right to work also happen to be the most vociferous critics of tax credits. And they're against the incentives, and have been for the last 3 years. And I'm not saying that they don't have a point, that they shouldn't be reformed, that we shouldn't look at that, and we should change them. And yeah, maybe we spend too much money on historic tax credits and da-da-da-da-da, and we can have that discussion. But let's have that discussion. Why are we picking right to work when labor costs are going down? And the argument, Senator, is inevitably, well, all these other right to work states have a lower unemployment rate. We can play with all the statistics. They have a higher growth rate. Well, Senator, let me tell you a statistic. Okay? You can play all sorts of games with statistics. We could surmise logically from that argument that because some right-to-work states have a higher growth rate, did you know, Senator, that the nation of Ethiopia last year had a 9.9% growth rate? So perhaps one of the proposals on this bill that I would make is to emulate the Ethiopian Economic Development Plan. Because they've had a 9.9% growth, so therefore we can surmise that it must be genius. The other question is, the Chinese have grown, what did they grow, 12% or something like that? I know that probably some people who have concerns about the federal government aren't going to like it in this body, but if we start on emulating the Chinese and what they do with their industries and how they have all that government money and they pick industries, I'm not sure even the Commerce Clause will cover that. But maybe, logically, we should have that discussion. What's the Chinese right now are growing the most. Let's emulate them. But maybe I'm totally wrong. Maybe it's not Ethiopia and China. Let's look at those child labor laws. Let's look at what else the third world does. Let's look at what's, let us race to the bottom to follow Mississippi and find our workers not educated, our population not educated, workplace deaths 51% higher than in non-white right-to-work states. Let's do all of that. Let us race to become more competitive by emulating the third world.
Now let's get back to Oklahoma, the senator from Buchanan.
Chair would like to remind all of our guests, even though the senators do have wit, please try to remain from outbursts.
You don't like my plan to emulate Ethiopia, China, and the rest of the third world?
We're both Irish. We both have a lot of hot air, so you just gave out some of yours. I'm going to give out some of mine.
I have worked on this plan for weeks to emulate the innovative things that Ethiopia has because they had such a high growth rate.
There's always ways to figure. What's the old saying? Figures don't lie, liars figure. There's always ways to manipulate figures. And people continue to try to manipulate them and blame everything on the union workforce, which in the state of Missouri is less than 10%. So even though we have spent 2 hours listening of all the bad things about right to work and organized labor, when are you going to quit blaming it all on us? Okay? We're not the problem.
Well,
we have always been
Senator,
a solution to the problem.
Let me answer that question for you.
Are you going to let me get to Oklahoma?
No. Okay. Let me answer that question. I can't make a disparaging remark about another state.
Can I get to Oklahoma eventually?
Go ahead to Oklahoma. Senator, here's what the answer to your question is, because we're in a recession.
It's the economy.
Because we're in a recession. No, the business community in every recession, in every depression, tries to undo advantages that they have had to give away in prosperity. They try to undo that. We've seen it while we've been in the Senate. What does this fix the six? Where did that come from?
I'll tell you where that came from now that we're jumping to that subject. This is how the Missouri State Chamber of Commerce works, so everybody knows. Basically, they are a voice in Jefferson City for the business community. Now, when big business comes up and pays enough into the Chamber of Commerce to make sure they stay in existence, the Chamber of Commerce says, what do you want? Well, Enterprise Car Leasing had the issue. A court case decided in 2002 about whistleblower protections for a CFO saying they were going off into possibly illegal territory. He won his court case all the way to the Supreme Court, but it has taken 7 years of that corporation, because they would not swallow their pride, that we have to change the whistleblower protections, even though we're an employment at will state, to appease one corporation. Now, we put some discrimination with federal law in there, but that was to deal with them. What we have here that we're dealing with the right to work issue is you have companies throughout the state of Missouri saying, we like the playing field how it goes. Our business policy is set up because of the current labor laws in the state. Don't change them. But once again, you have the influence of a lot of money coming to the chamber and saying, we need to change right to work, even though many employers, their own members said, we don't want you to touch the issue. It's all about money, just like it is when they come to us to give money to subsidize their corporations so they do not have to pay. It's the same thing for the chamber. That's where they get the philosophy from. Take the money, and we will expend your money on influence in the legislature. Don't be fooled. Money talks. He who with the gold rules. It's been around for 2,000 years, and it'll continue. So there's where we get that. Do you want to go back to Oklahoma yet?
Yeah, I'll let you talk about this Oklahoma. I'm so tired of Oklahoma, Oklahoma, Oklahoma.
Okay. In the years since Right to Work was adopted, the senator from Buchanan said, yes, it was adopted in the year 2001 in an election of 2002. But since the years Right to Work was adopted, more than 160 Oklahoma employers announced mass layoffs. More than 100 facilities have closed their doors in the face of lower wage competition abroad. It is estimated that from 2001 to 2008, trade with China alone reduced the number of Oklahoma jobs by more than 20,000. The Imation Corporation announced late 2002 after Right to Work was passed, that it planned to construct a data storage manufacturing plant in Oklahoma. The move was hailed as early evidence of the impact of Right to Work. 4 years later, however, the company eliminated a significant share of its local workforce in order to shift production to guess where?
Oklahoma.
Mexico.
I thought you were obsessed with Oklahoma. So.
No, you were obsessed, so I'm giving you the facts. Bridgestone Firestone, citing fierce competition from low-cost steam-producing countries, laid off 1,400 employees, closed its Oklahoma City factory, and moved production to Costa Rica. The Oklahoma City shutdown was part of a national trend that saw GM shutter multiple plants in the United States while investing billions of dollars in new facilities in Mexico, where auto worker wages are less than one-tenth of even their non-union counterparts' wages north of the border. In 2008, the Nautilus Corporation, a company with deep roots in Oklahoma, announced it was closing shop and laying off 150 Tulsa employees in favor of producing its fitness equipment in China.
China?
Yep. We went Mexico, Costa Rica. Now we're in China.
I was frightened. I was going to say Oklahoma again.
Do you remember an officer and a gentleman?
Yeah.
There's only two things that come from Oklahoma.
Yeah. The
In 2009,
you
Right to Work.
You cannot disparage another state in the union.
Yeah. In 2009, Right to Work was ranked 14th in importance. Below such factors as highway accessibility, available land, and construction cost. In Oklahoma, 10 years after adopting Right to Work, the state's marketing materials never mention Right to Work. Their economic development marketing materials don't even mention Right to Work, even though we listen to everybody talk about Right to Work.
Well, Senator, let me, I don't know if you heard, but, you know, I'm on the Jobs Committee, and so the director of Missouri Economic Development, who's actually been in the room in negotiations, we work for a state. It's the Center from 15th Bill. So I asked him in committee, I said, you know, I've heard all this stuff about, now there's an ironic quality philosophically, if I could, to this whole tax credit discussion and incentives. And let me go over it with you. So-called conservatives are concerned about tax credits, which are actually tax cuts.
Tax breaks, tax credits.
What I mean is tax credits are tax cuts, whether you redeem them or not, right? So so-called conservatives are concerned about tax credits or tax cuts, which actually, as you know, make government smaller because they are concerned about funding big government entitlements like education and health care. Now, I feel like I'm in a time warp, and Rod Serling's going to show up at some moment, because I remember this precise argument came from the left in 2005, that these tax credits, and I even looked it up, and former Senator Ken Jacob and Governor Holden had talked about loopholes and da-da-da-da-da, and their point was, you know, you have these initiatives for business, and it affects your ability to do the budget. And I looked it up, and former Senator Ken Jacob had an amendment 1 year when they had a difficult budget to do away with tax credits. So it's just ironic that I find myself in 2009 through 11 hearing this argument from conservatives who, you know, they're opposing tax credits, which are tax cuts for business and make government smaller, because they're worried about funding entitlements, which are actually elements of big government. Now, this is an argument that you would have expected the former senator from the 24th to make back in 2005. And by the way, I think she did. So I just have never understood that. So that's why when I was inquiring, the hole in all of this is, and I hope you see the big hole, the proponents of Right to Work haven't broken down yet and said, well, I'm for giving the incentive to that Japanese automaker. They think, or seem to think, that right to work in and of itself will bring that automaker. Well, you have provided, and I have provided, ample upon ample upon ample examples where, guess what? That's going to cost the taxpayers a whole $100 million or $555 million. And it doesn't stop there, because these companies don't come in and they don't have a trained workforce. They don't have some agreement with the employer. The taxpayer, ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching.
On that notion, let me give you an industry in our state that goes on right now, because we continue to sit here and say in our debate that right to work isn't the issue. Now let's put a different spin on it. It's kind of one of those statements, what have you done for me lately, that we always ask. Well, what has the labor unions throughout the state, especially let's segregate them to the building trade unions throughout the state, what have they done for you lately? Okay, in the state of Missouri, last year, throughout the entire state, all those contractors that pay into health and welfare funds spent over $850 million in the state of Missouri for health and welfare benefits for their retirees and their employed, and for so long they're unemployed. Think about that. $850 million, not in the Medicaid system, but in the private health and welfare funding system. In the state of Missouri, in the last year, they have paid out in this industry, in the state of Missouri, close to $400 million in pension benefits. So these are all these pensions that these people worked for years that are now able to draw upon them and take those dollars and use them as purchasing tools. So let's go over it again. $850 million in health and welfare in 1 year, $400 million in pension payouts, $67 million in job training funds, not state of Missouri job training funds. These are funds that the construction worker does not put on his check or her check, but says we're going to give to apprenticeship funds.
And it's paid for with them and the employer.
Yes, the employer and the worker.
It's not
a taxpayer. Let's go over it one more time so we can keep sticking these numbers in our heads of what the industry, the union construction trade industry, does in the state of Missouri. A payout every year of $850 million in health and welfare benefits, $400 million a year in pension benefits, $67 million in job training dollars. And in the last 10 years, here's a real kicker for you. In the last 10 years throughout the entire state of Missouri, their pension funds, whether they be with ULICO, HIT, BIT, whatever, their pension funds in the state of Missouri have invested $1 billion of their pension dollars back into the state of Missouri. So let's all close our eyes for a minute and think about it. I have a business that's going to pay their employees' health and welfare at a tune of $850 million a year. They're going to pay job training dollars at no cost to the taxpayers of $67 million. They're going to pay out pension benefits of $400 million so that people can use that purchasing power to spur business. And then over the last 10 years, they are going to invest $1 billion into the infrastructure in the state of Missouri. And all they say to you is, leave us alone. Let us continue to operate the way we have been operating the last 50 years. Leave us alone. Now, I sit on Mosier's as a trustee. That is an $8 billion pension fund in the state of Missouri. In the state of Missouri, you have the teacher's retirement fund, which is about $28 to $30 billion. Okay? MoDOT workers and highway patrol, they're about $2 to $3 billion. So I've just listed to you three pension funds that the taxpayer pays into. Close to $40 billion are in those funds. How much of that $40 billion of those pension funds has been reinvested in the state of Missouri? Do you have an idea, Senator?
Oklahoma. I'm sorry.
Zero. Not one penny of investment dollars from them $40 billion has been reinvested. Now, I sit on Mosher's. You know where we invest some of our money? In their timberland in Australia. We take taxpayers' dollars and invest more in Australia than we do the state of Missouri. We have an industry that puts up over the last 10 years $1 billion of investment back into this state, plus $850 million in health and welfare benefits, so that we can subsidize the uninsured because the hospitals will raise our rates to make sure we pay for a $50 Band-Aid. $67 million a year in job training dollars, not $1 comes from Missouri's job training funds, and $400 million in pension benefits. And the employers that came up and testified said, just leave us alone. And here we are in the eighth week of the Missouri General Assembly saying, we need to make this a right-to-work state to create more jobs. And I've just given you an industry that does a positive impact to this state.
Senator, the problem that I have most of all with this whole thing is it's a grand distraction. You know, I described it as like this dog whistle that nobody hears. What I mean is it's just nobody in the business community who really, you know, the Missouri Chamber had to fix the six, and then belatedly 5 weeks into the session, they just threw in right to work. But they didn't even come out with this as the most important things. And I was in your fair city about 2 weeks ago. Fascinating.
The city?
No. I go talk to this chamber board. And
they invite
they
me.
All
they
talk about
me.
The fix the six, and they all talk about that, and a couple bring up right to work. And I said, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but for the last 3 or 4 years, all I've heard about is angel entrepreneur tax cuts or tax credits and incentives to do this and incentives to do that and deal closing funds and upfront money. What happened to all this? You know, I told them about I told one of the people there's an old Warner Brothers cartoon.
You and I must watch a lot of TV.
Oh, I watch a lot of cartoons. I find them fascinating. You know, they're really usually true to life, actually. And there's this famous one where there's this frog. This guy digs up something buried 100 years ago, and he opens up the concrete thing, and out pops this frog, and it starts singing. This is a famous Warner Brothers one. And I won't sing, but he's swinging Swanee, and beautiful voice. I mean, this frog that's been buried for 100 years. And this guy goes, keep in mind, it's Warner Brothers cartoon, so he goes, wow, I've found this gem. And whenever the frog sings, it has a big top hat on, and it has a cane, and it sings Swanee, and all this sort of stuff. And this guy, you know, it's a Warner Brothers cartoon, so he goes, wow, I'm going to build my own theater. So, of course, being a Warner Brothers cartoon, he's able to build a theater, you know, like literally in 5 seconds of film, you know, and he puts up this thing. And he's going to make a bunch of money off of this frog. And so he has this stage built or whatever, and he does a test run, and he opens up the concrete box from the time capsule, and out comes the frog with the top hat and the cane, and it does this great rendition, and he goes, oh, okay. So then, of course, being a Warner Brothers cartoon, the next scene is you see the theater sold out, packed house, okay, no seating room at all. And so he opens up the concrete box, and the frog sits there and goes, ribbit, ribbit, ribbit. Now, you might wonder, maybe he's lost his mind talking about that Warner Brothers cartoon, but I bring it up because that fix the six and all these quote-unquote business priorities that don't even talk about Compete Missouri, that don't even talk about making incentives and how we can become more competitive and capping tax credits to provide those, like David Kerr, the director of Missouri Economic Development, who used to be with Kansas, who knows what they do and has recommended things to make us more competitive. Let's not listen to any of that. Let's fix six little things.
I agree with you.
What I mean is that whole thing reminds me of that frog. You know, they wheel it out, and they've got this top hat, and they go, you know, if we just make these asbestos workers not have to be able to, you know, sue the manufacturer for that dangerous stuff that's gotten in their lungs and killed them, that'll be great, and that'll help business. And the problem is, you look at all that list that we have heard about, and some of it dealt with, and it doesn't add one job. And so I'm in your fair city, and I go, look, I'm term limited. I can start being real honest with you. But you guys have talked about all this other stuff for 5 years, and then this year you don't say a peep. And you've got a guy who used to be over Kansas Economic Development who knows more about Compete, who's actually been in the room trying to get these companies here and knows everything involved, and he's saying, do this, and that hasn't even made it to the floor yet. And we're working on right to work, and we're making it harder for an asbestos worker who has mesothelioma to sue the manufacturer, because we've got to prioritize protecting that Chinese manufacturer of asbestos. That's going to add jobs. Ribbit, ribbit, ribbit.
I agree with you, and one of the things I wanted to touch upon, too, is bringing in...
I think the world's lost its mind. I mean, you just come in these places sometimes, and you just go, is this real?
Senator, you and I both have 21 months left on our sentence, and then we're...
And I'm going to start telling the truth.
I think
I'm
going to
just start the telling the truth.
Let me tell you why you try to tell the truth.
Pardon me, Senators. One more time, I'd like to remind our guests in the upper gallery to please refrain from applause or any types of outbursts and allow the senators to continue.
Thank you, Mr. President. But no, I'm going to...
Let me say one thing on telling the truth. Sometimes when you tell the truth, the people don't like to hear
it. No, they don't. You know, not that we haven't told them the truth, but, you know, you kind of moderate it back, and you go, I don't want to be mean, and all this sort of stuff. But you kind of thought, you know, the great thing, the only good thing about term limits, and I've discussed this with senators in the minority and majority, you got 21 months left. This is your last time maybe on this stage. Tell the truth. There's a great movie about Warren Beatty, Bulworth. He's running for U.S. Senate in California, and he loses his mind, and he starts telling the truth. And instead of, you know, like, destroying his political career, everybody loves him.
Robert,
and Halle Berry, and Halle Berry becomes his girlfriend.
It was the candidate.
And all this stuff, and I'm just saying he starts telling the truth, and the political system can't take it.
Now, getting back to one of the things about the employers, because we want to talk while we're saying this is what the employers want. There were employers that came forth and say, we want the status quo. We want to continue to operate with the business plan that we have set up. And one thing that everyone forgets about the right to work issue is you can have enough petition to be organized and enough to have a bargaining unit. All that employer has to do is bargain in good faith. It does not require them to sign a contract. Well, one of the employers said so graciously at one meeting with several of my colleagues in St. Louis is, you're taking away my right as an employer to sign a union-only union employment security clause. Why would you want to take away a tool that I feel to be beneficial? Now, let me give you one more positive story about labor unions. You know, the two companies in St. Louis during these hard-pressed times in the last 4 months have done press releases of expansion of jobs in the St. Louis metropolitan area. The two major corporations that they're all saying we can't get to come to Missouri, Express Scripts and Worldwide Technology. Now, the chief counsel of Express Scripts' father is a retired member of IBEW Local 1. His father was able to give him an opportunity through those wages to receive a college education and then go on to law school. This child has excelled. I did not even know this existed until a year ago. He came knocking in my office and they said, the chief counsel of Express Scripts wants to meet with you. He worked with you. I says, when did I work with the chief counsel of Express Scripts? He worked summer help as an electrician when I was an apprentice. We worked at St. John's Mercy on the 7th floor of the medical office building. and we did doctor's offices. And they have recently located and expanded in the St. Louis metropolitan area. One of the founding members of Worldwide Technology's father is a retired bricklayer, former head of the Bricklayers Union in St. Louis. Now, with the St. Louis roots those two individuals had, and those two individuals were raised with their parents being able not to become rich, but to provide a livable wage so they could raise a family, we have two success stories that have reinvested in the St. Louis community, the only two businesses that have done major expansions in the last 6 months in St. Louis. But, oh, by the way, I'm sorry. Unions are the reason nobody wants to relocate.
Senator, I'll just tell you something that is most egregious about this bill, is the whole concept that we've got to somehow compete not only with these other states but the third world, and we've got to become more like them. We've never been like that in this country. And we built a middle class, and before that middle class there was a working class, and all they owned was the shirt on their back. And we came out of that, and what we did is we created the greatest and most prosperous nation in the history of mankind, and it's still true. And what I don't like is when people come along and act like somehow that's just part of the recession, and that somehow it was the middle class's fault for the recession, and it had nothing to do with the banks and actions of the federal government, and all this. It had nothing to do with subprime loans and any of those things. It was somehow now the workers' fault. When I watch, I don't agree, by the way, I don't think you ever leave, but I don't agree with everybody in Wisconsin. But it is amazing to me, Senator, if you think about it, that in 2001, firefighters and police and public employees on September 11, 2001, were esteemed national heroes. Fast forward 10 years. And now they're a burden. Oh, they have pensions. They have pensions that provide that they don't starve in old age. They have pensions and wages that let them buy a home and be a taxpayer and buy a car and do all those things. Now they're a burden. In 10 years, they've gone from hero to burden. Overnight. That's why I'm saying this to me is a middle class issue, that the only place the individual has, they can't rely on the courts anymore. And after this session, they can't rely on this anymore. I was trying to read and walk and chew gum and all those things at the same time.
You mean you can't multitask?
But no, to me it's a middle class. Now, Senator, I'm going to end my. I think I am inquiring of you, so I'm going to end my inquiry. And I just wanted to tell you, the amendment that I'll get around to explaining now is actually an amendment that we talked about.
Are you done with me?
Well, yes, I'll end my inquiry. Mr. President?
Thank you.
Senator from the 11th.
I'd like to explain my amendment, and then I'll yield to any inquiries. Mr. President, the...
Let me check and see if it's been distributed.
It has.
Okay. Please proceed.
Mr. President, thank you. I request a reading be waived. I think that's already there. I think I've already moved the adoption, too. Okay. This deals with the issue that the Senator from 13th and I discussed, which is, you know, we're talking about this world competition, and what happens with a lot of these incentives and foreign companies? They export the jobs. So the simple purpose of this bill is we've had about jobs going to state to state. What this amendment tries to do is deal with the issue of jobs going to Mexico and other countries and India, and this amendment provides the provision in the bill will not apply, so the right to work will not apply to any company that in a five-year period cuts 200 or more workers as part of a reduction force of layoff and then ships those jobs to a foreign nation. With that, Mr. President, I'd be happy to yield to any questions.
The senator from the 11th has moved the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 1 to Senate Bill Number 1 and Senate Bill Number 206. Does any senator desire to be heard upon that motion?
President.
The senator from Jefferson, for what purpose are you seeking recognition?
Could I inquire the senator from the 13th?
Senator from the 13th, do you yield?
Yes.
He does proceed.
Hi, Senator.
Good evening.
Do you ever get frustrated when you have an inquiry from the senator from the 11th and he won't let you finish your thoughts before he continually interrupts you?
I have a daughter like that.
No, I was driving up today. If you remember when this bill was first scheduled for debate in the committee hearing, we had a massive snowstorm. And we basically canceled session that week. And then today, I drive up, and we have a major snowstorm. And I started thinking, well, I told this to you before, maybe that's a sign from Jesus. He was a carpenter. And maybe he's trying to tell us something here.
I'll tell you what, I woke up today, and you know what happened to me last year driving home. I sit there and shake now after spinning out on 70 and seeing a semi come at you, that when it snows, I am no longer that easygoing driver. And I woke up this morning and I looked out and I says, what are they doing to me? Because I was nervous about driving. I had become a nervous
I was
driver.
Afraid a lot of the people that wanted to be here tonight wouldn't be able to make it. We have just
well,
a little
it looks like this issue's kind of important to them, so they came up through the weather and traked up. And we're all appreciative of that.
They would have walked here if they had to.
Yeah.
We don't have a whole lot of time because I think the bill's going to be laid over shortly. But before we get into this, I've known you probably half of my life.
I know I'm old.
You had gray hair then, though, Senator. You actually roomed with my father, and that's how I got to know you. So you know our family pretty good. You know the funny things that happen to McKenna's a lot. So this past weekend was a St. Patrick's Day parade downtown. And every year we get a parade float. There was about 120 McKenna's all wearing T-shirts. And we had a truck with 1970s speakers on it because our family can't afford anything nicer than that. We had a bunch of people walking in between the truck, and then there was a trolley that was reserved for the senior citizens and our family and some of the kids. So we're going down Market Street, and we're about halfway through the parade, about where the Union Station and the old post office are. And we look behind us, and the trolley started going, chook, 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 chook. Smoke started coming from it. Our parade float died in the middle of St. Patrick's Day parade.
Well, a lot of people
that only happens to a McKenna.
What's that, Murphy's Law?
That's my mother's maiden name. But, okay, I wanted to tell you that real quick. But when we heard from the proponents of this, we heard a lot about the site selector that came to visit our committee. It was asked in committee how many clients they represented last year. Guy told us they represented 6 clients. Represented less clients than the number of Democrats in the state Senate. And we're supposed to take what this one individual says, who testified for informational purposes, but it sure didn't seem like it. We're supposed to take what this one person said as fact. That's curious to me. You've referenced a lot of studies. The senator from the 11th referenced a lot of studies, what companies look for. Jansen wrote, but I think you take credit for a lot of that, a press release about what companies look for.
He cleaned it up.
We have the third lowest energy costs in the country.
That was one of them.
Fifth lowest. That's what companies look for, especially big corporations. There is a publication that is the voice for site selectors. You want to know the name of that magazine?
Share it with me.
Site Selector Magazine. I got a copy of a magazine that was online, and it's interesting what they list as what they find important to what matters most and they interviewed corporate real estate executives. And they had 10 qualifiers that are the most important to these companies. Right to work wasn't one of them. Same list that you guys were referencing. Workforce skills was number one on this one. The state and local tax scheme. Nobody can compete with the taxes in Missouri.
We are one of the lowest tax states.
One of the lowest tax states. I gave you a copy of the CNBC's study that said Missouri is the fifth lowest as far as the cost of doing business. And the cost of doing business includes labor costs. This here talks about workforce skills, state and local tax scheme, transportation infrastructure, which seems to be an issue that nobody cares about in Missouri. We've got roads crumbling. We've got bridges that are 20 years past repair.
Did you just see, I think it was in this week's post, or maybe it was a business journal, but the head of the United States Chamber of Commerce came and spoke to the Regional Commerce and Growth Association, and one of his biggest issues, which he bragged that he's working with organized labor with, is infrastructure improvements throughout the United States, and that we
need
to
hear
do
it, but
something.
Nobody seems to get behind it.
Yeah, we continue to crumble.
Another thing that the senator from Clay talked about, and you know, it's funny how data is always used to prove your point. She started talking about some of our surrounding states and their unemployment rates. The site selector gentleman is from South Carolina, right to work state. Higher unemployment rate than Missouri. The highest unemployment rate in the country is where?
Nevada.
Nevada, another non-right to work state. 7 out of the 10 highest unemployment rates in the country are right to work states. But we don't mention that. We just pick and choose where the data reflects our opinion.
There's a mission this year to try to whittle away it tools that I think work in a positive way to help Missouri, but certain groups say they are detrimental to Missouri. And those small groups have a loud voice due to the fact that they pay a large per capita into the chamber, and they get what they want.
With this issue, I haven't seen one employee come out and push for this. Seems to be one or two different groups. I heard a funny story, and I'll save that. I want to make sure this is true before I bring this up on the floor, and it has to do with
a
company.
I'm pretty sure we'll have another opportunity.
I think so. It has to do with a company that was a major contributor to the Missouri Chamber that is not anymore because of their action on this bill. Let's see. Oh, I wanted to point out to the people in the crowd that the senator from the 15th is self-conscious about his bald spot.
I think we appreciate you sharing that with us.
That's the senator that you were talking about. There's meetings going on right now about economic development. Those are the bills we ought to be talking about.
Put them out on the floor. Let us discuss them. Let's lay them over. We have energy issues to talk about in this state that need to be discussed on the Senate floor. That's a major issue because we are one. Our energy policy, they must have done something right in the past if we're one of the lowest energy cost states for businesses. And we have some energy policies that want to be discussed to keep us 40 years down the road at that level, making us an economic engine for energy resources. We should be discussing that, but once again, we're here on this issue, and I'm sure we'll bring it up again. And the problem is I sat there and gave facts and figures. If people would just, instead of they listen to organized labor, this organized labor, that, look at what they bring to the table. Look, when I told you those dollar amounts, but also look at the community service they provide going into the inner cities.
That's an area I thought that I would bring up too, their charitable work.
Major charitable work. Whenever the inner city agencies need help, who do they call? They call the unions to come out and provide those services.
Well, for free.
Yes, for free. What more can an industry do to prove they want to be an asset to the state. What more hurdles are you going to put up
Let's remember, this issue is all about 50% plus one decide that they want this to happen in their place of where they work. Much like how we're elected. 50% plus one of the people in my district elected me.
The same thing as the senator from Clay said in one of her statements. Well, in a union election, the weather can be bad, and not a lot of people show up and they get that. I hate to break it to you, but there's been weather bad during election days, and look at some of the elected people. Funniest story I ever reached is when I was elected.
We may not be here.
Yes. We fooled a lot of people. But I was 24 years old when I came and was elected, and I was nervous going on to the Missouri House. And I thought, God almighty, I don't know how I ever got elected.
And then it took you how long?
It took me about 2 minutes to look around and say, I know how I got elected. I don't know how they got elected. So,
Senator, what's often lost in this debate is all these studies, but what it comes down to is wages. And the senator from the right in front of you, the seventh.
Senator from the seventh.
She made some statement about wages, how wages are higher in right-to-work states, and it got quite a chuckle from the crowd. And I don't know who gave her that information, but before session, when this bill was introduced, I got onto the Department of Labor Standards and looked up wages, and not of just union employees and non-union employees. I looked up wages of both of them together and compared Missouri and Illinois to all of our surrounding states in areas like secretarial work, office personnel, maintenance. It was like 20 of them that I just randomly chose. In every one of those, the wage rates, even the non-union wage rates, were higher in Missouri and Illinois than those other states. If the goal is to decrease wages in our state for economic development, that is a backwards idea. Somebody gave me a great analogy. They said the top 1% has the buying power of 4 million Americans. I don't know the number exactly.
It'd be more than that.
That doesn't matter. It might have been 440 million Americans. And they broke it down like this. This top 1% person is going to buy a car, maybe five cars, and they're going to be really expensive cars. They're going to be nice, but they're probably going to stop there. These 440 million are each going to buy a car or two. And what that does for our economy is unimaginable. After the stock market crashed, the top 1% had about 28, almost 30% of all the wealth in the country.
It's the simple capitalistic way they teach you in microeconomics, your first starter class of economics in college. It's called supply and demand. You have to have a demand to create a supply.
Well, that's why Henry Ford liked a unionized workforce, and that's why he wanted to pay him well, because what did they do when he paid him well?
They bought cars.
They bought cars from him.
Yes, and one of the things the senator from Clay said is we got to get these companies so they start producing. Well, if nobody's buying, there's nothing to produce. You have to have the purchasing mechanism, and the simple economic capitalistic strategy is you need to be able to buy so somebody can produce.
You talked about, isn't this easier to debate like this, other than the senator from the 11th interrupting you all the time?
I do like his stories. Ribbit,
I do too.
Ribbit and cha-ching,
especially
cha-ching.
When he starts talking about cartoons. I have a one-year-old, and I'm starting to watch SpongeBob SquarePants a lot now.
In my day and age, it was Barney.
Barney?
Is Barney still around?
I don't know, but Kellen's not watching Barney.
Okay. Do you want to inquire someone else, Senator?
Yeah, Mr. President. Senator, thanks for the inquiry.
Senator. From Jefferson, for what purpose are you seeking recognition?
Can I inquire the senator from St. Francis?
Senator from St. Francis, do you yield?
I yield.
He does proceed.
Senator?
How are you?
I'm great.
Good. And you know I had the majority leader's position last year, Senator, and I don't want to prolong this because I know he's wanting to put it on the shelf pretty quick here. But I did want to stand up and talk for a brief moment because you know, what you're doing here, I know, is a delaying tactic, and that's fine. And I'm with you on that. But there are several people on my side of the aisle, the Republicans, that will be standing on this issue. You know, you talk about snowing the two times. It may be because it's be a cold day when I defend the union.
Till you sit down on this bill?
Yeah. But what we're going to do, as we talked before, I don't like to just shove things down people's throats, and I think that's part of it. And there's several other senators that are Republican, and I just didn't want all the press and all the people to say, oh, it's just those Democrats that are holding up.
Right.
Because probably, you know what, Senator, if the Democrats are the only ones that stand, I would suspect that there would be another option that gets played here.
I understand.
The nuclear option, and there are a bunch of senators on my side of the
and
aisle.
And I appreciated your leadership as the floor leader last year.
Thanks.
The difference between this bill and virtually everything we've ever debated out here is there's really no compromise.
No, there is no.
You're either a right-to-work state or you're not. And I'm not a person that filibusters, but to me, this is one that I will. And
well,
I would hope
past
that
couple years, I've hate people that filibustered because my job was to move the luggage and make the planes go, and now we're not there. But I know that you all have deep-seated beliefs here, and you're going to slow the process down. And when we come back to this, which I'm sure we will.
We don't need to.
Well, I'm okay if we don't, but I suspect that there will be pressure applied to come back to it, and there will be people that have volunteered not to use that nuclear option, and there's a lot of them in your area.
And I appreciate
Jefferson
you,
County.
You
we share Jefferson County, and 60. They said 68%, I think, of the union membership voted with my party this time, and that's
well. That's that's the dirty little secret that nobody's talking about here. Senator?
Well, I don't want to prolong this because I think we're going to lay this bill over, but I wanted to make sure that people knew because I was watching Donnybrook a couple weeks ago and they were saying, well, the Democrats will have to prevent there. The reality in this body, because the numbers, it's not the Democrats that will completely prevent it. It will be some Republicans.
I
ask your people.
You're not the only one. I think there's lots of.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Members on your side that will
stand
with us.
So I would ask your people that are here and other people to make sure, because I'm term limited. It doesn't really matter. The guys upstairs could only vote against me twice.
I'll miss you.
Against me twice. Yeah, that's why I told people over at Leadwood the other day. I said, you know, I'm over here speaking not because I'm trying to get your vote, because you've already voted against me twice, but you can't vote against me again. But I just want to express that there are people that are open-minded about this on our side of the aisle, and even though we don't want to delay it any further because we're going to put it on the shelf, we want to make sure that the people that are here and the people that are listening understand that fact.
And I don't want it to be painted that way either, so I'm glad that you stood up.
Even though I don't agree with the unions all the time, my father was a union glass worker, and my mother was a telephone worker, and they're going to be put in a nursing home this Saturday in your district, and because of the fact that they had good benefits, the state will not be paying for
That's
their nursing
exactly
home.
Right.
They will be paying for their nursing home, and so we want
to close to 80% of all union members have a pension and health care and earned a great salary. You can't say that about everybody else.
No, and that's the reason my brother and I probably were the first of our extended family to be able to go to college.
Which is shocking that you went to college.
Yes, it is. No, it's not shocking I went. It's shocking that I passed. Senator, I know it was your inquiry, but
thank
I wanted to get up and say a couple things, and I want to get back and let
thank
the
you,
Senator
Mr.
from
President.
The 23rd. Thank you.
Senator from the 13th, for what purpose are you seeking recognition?
I think we're coming to a close, so can I briefly inquire the senator from Clay.
Senator from Clay, do you? Does proceed.
Senator, coming to the end, I just want to make note, early on when we discussed this issue about a hearing and about the attendance and the people passionate on this issue, as well as those in the upper gallery, I always told you that these people that are members of these organizations are very proud and understand decorum. They just want to show by their attendance their beliefs in what's going on and their frustrations, but I think you can attest to the professionalism that the people in the upper gallery, as well as those throughout the hearing, have been, and that the working labor people aren't as bad as everyone makes us out to be.
Senator, I just wanted to, in fact, whenever I ask you to make inquiry of me, that I really wanted to go out of my way to thank the people in the gallery for two things. Number one, I think my bill gets the record for packing the most people in the gallery, so I guess I can thank you for that. But the other thing is, yes, this is a perfect example of how people can disagree on an issue without being disagreeable. And I'm glad that Missouri is taking the lead in that, and all the people up there, that they came out on a very cold and nasty, snowy, slick day, and to be able to come down here and actually watch and listen and observe the decorum of the Senate while we bantered back and forth, and I'll say Oklahoma one more time, and have a good sense of humor about it while we address very serious issues. So I thank you for that. I thank the people in the gallery for that, and I appreciate it.
And in light of that statement, if you just want to lay it over permanently, I would not argue. Thank you,
Mr. President.
Senator from Clay, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
I ask that you lay that bill on the informal calendar.
The bill shall be placed on the informal calendar with the amendment pending. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, send over to the order of business of announcements.
Announcements. Senator from Johnson, do you have an announcement?
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Education will meet for a very, very short executive session, 5 minutes upon adjournment in Senate Concurrent Room Number 1. Education, 5 minutes in Senate Hearing Room 1. Thank you.
Further announcements? Seeing none, Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. One announcement on upcoming legislation. Senate bills for perfection, Senate Bill 17, Senate Bill 62, Senate Bill 306, Senate Bill 282, Senate Bill 250, Senate Bill 242, Senate Bill 220. On the informal calendar, Senate Bill 8, Senate Bill 130, Senate Bill 145, and Senate Bill, I expect Senate Bill 1 will not come up again until after spring break. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further announcements? Seeing none, Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand adjourned under the rules.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from the 23rd. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye. All those opposed, please say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. We stand adjourned under the rules.